Hi, this is Stephanie Miller. You know how much I love the Monterey Peninsula. You've got it all. Mountains, the sea, some of the best box wine I've ever had. You also have a great radio station, KRXA, your progressive prescription. So join me, voice guy extraordinaire Jim Ward, and producer Chris Lavoie as we take back America every weekday morning, 6 to 9 a.m., right here on AM 540.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Bob Fuss, live on Capitol Hill. The Senate has joined the House in voting to use the bill funding the Iraq War to try to force President Bush to start withdrawing U.S. forces. The details are different, but the message to the president is the same. Nebraska Republican Senator Chuck Hagel.
I will not support sustaining a flawed and failing policy in Iraq.
Most Republicans were on the other side. South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham said setting a date to bring troops home is guaranteeing defeat.
This is irresponsible. This does everything wrong.
The Senate vote, like the one in the House, was close, but it is now almost certain the bill that emerges from a House-Senate conference will tie money for the Iraq War to a pullout date and will thus face a veto from President Bush. I'm Bob Fuss, live on Capitol Hill. Now with more CBS News, here's Harley Carnes.
There was another American death in Iraq today, the word of it just coming in. An insurgent rocket fell inside the Green Zone at Baghdad, killing a civilian contractor and one soldier. An Aussie citizen, David Hicks, pleaded guilty to lesser charges at Guantanamo of materially aiding terrorists. CBS's Dan Revive is in Washington.
Hicks may be sentenced this week, and it seems the U.S. would let him serve prison time in Australia, closer to his family. So there won't be any trial. His was supposed to be the first of 80 military tribunals at Guantanamo. If any detainee is convicted of terrorism, an appeal would probably go to the Supreme Court, which struck down the Defense Department's original trial procedures.
White House spokesman Tony Snow is taking a break from that high-pressure job to face an even greater pressure job. His doctors found cancer on his liver this time.
My message to Tony is stay strong. A lot of people love you and care for you and will pray for you.
Snow was recently declared cancer-free 2 years after having his colon removed to fight that cancer. The tainted pet food situation keeps growing.
Suspecting the number of dog and cat deaths is much higher than reported, the Veterinarians Information Network is now surveying some 18,000 vets. So far, 104 deaths have been posted on its data-sharing website, far more than the number the government links to the tainted pet food. Is the recall having any effect, Network co-founder Dr. Paul Pion?
The number of new cases posted has slowed down. Does that mean that we've run out of the people who would spontaneously post, or does that mean that it's slowing down? I hope the latter.
Lawsuits against the maker of the tainted pet food are being filed around the country. Barry Bagnato, CBS News, Washington.
Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney is giving college students who raise campaign funds for him a sales commission. Kevin Madden is campaign spokesman.
A lot of these younger voters who are really the frontline advocates of every campaign, they're very energized by the governor based on his ideas. And this is just one new and innovative way that the governor is using to draw a lot of these volunteers in.
Romney's the first known to reward college students for their work. On Wall Street, the Dow lost nearly 72 points today. The Nasdaq was off about 18. This is CBS News.
The following is a paid commercial message.
It's estimated that over 200 million people in the U.S. suffer from herpes-caused cold sores. There are many products on the market today. Relieve One-Day Cold Sores Symptom Treatment is excellent because it relieves cold sore symptoms in just a day. Pain eases in minutes, and other symptoms resolve in just 24 hours. Relieve is non-toxic, comprised of botanical extracts, and is 100% guaranteed. Millions of sufferers have found that Relieve works best for them. Only you can determine that Relieve is best for you. You can now buy Relieve at most major stores.
Wouldn't it feel great if just once someone said to you, hey, you know what I noticed? You're a really good driver. But no one does. They take your impressive skills for granted. Well, Progressive will tell you. They're willing to say, yes, you are a good driver, and we're giving you a special rate, a special lower rate. You could save over $400 when you switch, just for being a good driver.
Good driver savings from Progressive. Switch today at Progressive.com. Progressive. It's about you, and it's about time.
Progressive Direct Insurance Company and its affiliates, Mayfield Village, Ohio. Available everywhere but Massachusetts. Prices vary based on how you buy.
A jury in Georgia has sentenced a woman to life without parole for killing her boyfriend with antifreeze. She was already in prison for killing her husband the same way 5 years earlier.
The jury's decision to spare Lynn Turner's life and instead give her a second life without parole sentence comes after her mother Helen Gregory got on the stand in Dalton, Georgia yesterday. Helen Gregory said, I beg you, please, don't do this. Don't put my daughter to death. Her children, Helen's grandchildren, have been through enough already. They can't lose their mother.
CBS's Pete Combs is in Atlanta. Sometimes it works both ways. Life is like a country song, too. Winona Judd, country superstar, is divorcing her husband, Dan R. Roach, because he's been arrested by the police in Nashville for having sex with a child, a girl younger than 13. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
Hey, Tanya Roberts here, and I want to know, where are you going on your next romantic getaway? Well, how about 3 days and two nights in Las Vegas? And what about you don't pay a dime for it? That's right. Act like a high roller in Vegas and pay nothing for it. It's all part of our celebration of Vegas's newest five-star resort, Tahiti Village. We want you to get out of Dodge. Stir up a little romantic magic in the most exciting city on earth with a complimentary second honeymoon, all on Tahiti Village. Come on. You know you deserve it. You know you want it. Las Vegas is calling. Just stop what you're doing and call this special toll-free number, 866-40-GO-NOW. Oh, and as a bonus, if you call right now, they're going to throw in tickets to a hot show right on the strip. Can we say high roller treatment, baby? So call 866-40-GO-NOW for all the exciting details. That's 866-40-GO-NOW. Call now.
Collins. Reporting for duty. Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Well, we got the compassion, we got the justice, I'm just looking for a living wage. Welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show, live, unscripted, unrehearsed, originating, as he said, in San Francisco. We got a great show lined up for you today as we tackle some important issues. Coming up in half an hour, Michael Ratner returns. He's the president of the Center for Constitutional Rights. They represent many of the detainees at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. And he'll inform us about the remarkable session that went into the evening last night at Gitmo as Australian David Hicks pleaded guilty to a single charge. Michael Ratner's got questions about that. We'll air him out about half an hour. Next hour, Stephen Zunis joins us. He's a professor of politics at the University of San Francisco. We're going to talk about the situation with Iran, where the British sailors and Marines remain in captivity, and gunboat diplomacy appears to be underway. We'll talk about the sanctions and also the prospects of a U.S. military assault on Iran. Jason Leopold pops in for his weekly visit in our second hour. He's the investigative reporter at truthout.org. I'm going to get his reaction to a very interesting, lengthy article in Sunday's New York Times Magazine by former NYT editor Max Frankel about the Libby trial. And just in two bullet points, Max Frankel comes off as a leak apologist, and he seems real friendly to Karl Rove. We'll also get an update from Melanie Sloan on the position of the White House related to documents in the Alberto Gonzalez flap. And crew has some issues of concern there. That's all ahead, plus your phone calls. You're invited to participate at any moment. Call me toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372. That's In Excess and Suicide Blonde, and that's as close as we'll come to offering any commentary on the autopsy of Anna Nicole Smith. But gosh, did she swallow the whole medicine cabinet? First up today, we want to take on the investigation, results of which were released in a leak form on Friday and then the full version yesterday. Regarding the fratricide death of Pat Tillman, this is a tough story. Very tough for the families, the family members who survived his death, including his brother. And it certainly does not reflect well on our military, either at the time of the incident that killed him and in the efforts to unravel the truth since then. Joining us is a member of the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. Perry Jeffries served as a first sergeant with the Army's 4th Infantry Division in Iraq during Operation Iraqi Freedom. And after deploying to Iraq and traveling with the cavalry through the Sunni Triangle, his unit moved into the Iran-Iraq border area and set up Camp Caldwell, the future home of the new Iraqi Army. And Perry Jeffries joined the Army after enlisting in the Texas National Guard. He served in Korea, Germany, and the U.S. before deploying to Iraq. He retired in 2004 and was awarded the Bronze Star and the Legion of Merit. He's a member of the Order of St. George for service to armor and cavalry. And he's a motorcycle buff who lives near Fort Hood, Texas. Perry Jeffries, nice to talk with you again. Welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Well, hey, good afternoon, sir.
How you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thank you very much.
Well, I appreciate you coming on to talk with us about a difficult issue here. Tell me your reaction to the way the Pentagon has dealt with the death of Pat Tillman.
You know, the whole thing has turned into just a mess. We talk about a foot shot where a person accidentally shoots herself in the foot.
Yeah.
And this seemed like one more foot shot by the Army. It could have been easily avoidable if they just told the truth to begin with. You know, and there's some Army values that go into there, integrity, honor, duty, respect to the family, and all of these seem to have been ignored. And I don't know why that was done, but this report, why didn't they discuss this with the family before it came out? This is the fifth investigation now that they've released on this thing, and they release it, and of course, a couple hours later, the family said, that's not what we were told, that's not what we needed to know. And it just seems an easily avoidable foot shot at a time when the Army doesn't need to be doing that.
Yeah. And it is stunning that, you know, they don't appear to recognize the sensitivity, even at this late date, to leak part of the report on Friday and, you know, ignore the feelings of the family members. And they've had a Congressman Mike Honda, from San Jose, which is where the family resides. That's where Pat Tillman went to high school. And, you know, he has been dogging the Pentagon very closely on these issues. And even with that pressure, they didn't seem to recognize the right way to go here.
Exactly. And I don't know at what point leaders begin to lose sight of just simple common sense. Even if they had no decency, you know, just common sense for defense would be called for. But this seems to be something that is almost related to fratricide. I mean, it does happen. It's sad. I think that often we can train to a different kind of standard to lessen the chances of it happening. But there was kind of a similar incident in the first Gulf War where a colonel got wrapped up in fratricide. And once again, it wasn't so much of the incident, but it was the repeated cover-ups in a series of investigations that I don't know if they ever got to all the bottom of it, but it ended up, you know, costing some people their career. And worse, it just, you know, dishonored the service of some really honorable people.
Mm-hmm. And Perry, from your point of view, is there a difference between a friendly fire death and fratricide? Is there a distinction there?
You know, well, now there's just murder. If a crime is committed, then certainly that becomes murder.
That's homicide.
Yeah, you know, well, homicide is when a man dies.
Mm-hmm.
Murder is when he dies unnecessarily. I think that the way we use the word fratricide in combat is it can happen, you know, by accident or through design. Mm-hmm. But if it was found out that he was intentionally killed, you know, by his own soldiers, then that would become murder, and we'd see a murder trial.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's what's happened here, and I don't know that the Army's trying to cover anything like that up, but what seems to be the problem is that they used his death as almost a recruiting tool and then hated to admit it later, and they still haven't really come out and taken any action against the people that did that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the man who's really on the hot seat, it appears, is Lieutenant General Philip Kinzinger, who headed the Army Special Ops Command when Corporal Tillman was killed. This is a quote from the report. We found compelling evidence that General Kinzinger learned of the suspected fratricide well before the memorial service for Corporal Tillman, which he attended, but failed to alert the family. The report also said that the general who retired last year had misled investigators by telling them he first learned of the suspected true cause of death the night before the memorial service. So he's got a little bit of a fibbing problem there, apparently.
Well, I think a whole bunch of people do, and there's several articles, and this is what the family's so upset about, is that there's several articles of the Uniform Code of Military Justice that could apply to these people, and even though the Army details the crime, as you said there, they knew that it wasn't true, but then no action is offered. Now, in this case, I think what's going to happen is they turn this back to the commander of these people now, and he still has an opportunity to make a decision. But since it's already been announced and promulgated as a done deal, then I think all of us, to include, you know, Pat and Mary Tillman, are assuming that the Army wants to put this behind them without taking any action against anybody.
Mm-hmm. Now, according to the investigators, they've recommended that 9 officers, 4 of them are generals who have been named, be subject to disciplinary action. But that action hasn't gone forward, and they don't appear to be recommending even a range of potential sanctions.
Right, and that's what I'm talking about. They turn this report over to the commander of these people and then wait for that commander to make that decision. But you'd think this is, once again, it's just so easy to avoid. At this point, why doesn't the more senior leadership of the Army or the Pentagon get involved and say, this is something we have to address right now. Let's coordinate our response. Let's get with the family, make sure that we're, you know, they understand what we're doing, and let's just quit shooting ourselves in the foot with this thing. And I don't know why they're not doing it. It's almost inexplicable.
Now, Perry, tell me when your BS detector goes off here, okay? I'm reading from the news account in today's New York Times. The report issued jointly by the Pentagon's Acting Inspector General Thomas F. Gimbel and the Army Criminal Investigation Command found no criminal wrongdoing in the shooting of Corporal Tillman, nor is there evidence of a broad cover-up, according to Mr. Gimbel.
There's the problem right there. And I think it's, you know, as the incident is detailed, it's pretty easy that in the actual shooting, probably not. You know, I wasn't there. We weren't there, but his own soldiers, I think we'd have heard of something about that by now if there was this conspiracy. But there is certainly a conspiracy to cover it up because more than one person worked to not tell the truth to this family.
Mm-hmm.
One of those generals said, I decided it wasn't the time. But that's not a decision he gets to make. And now that it's almost 3 years later and the family knows more about it than a lot of these guys, I don't know why they're still trying to hide some of the details from them.
Now, Perry, help me with this because you understand the military better than I. While the report calls for 9 officers to be held accountable, it only names those holding the rank of general because of privacy laws. So why is it that, say, a colonel or someone below the rank of general wouldn't be named at this point?
I don't know. That's ridiculous. They could name them all if they wanted it. It's just somebody's choice to not do that. And I don't know why, because, you know, we all know Lindy England's name. They certainly didn't conceal her name for privacy. Any of the junior enlisted soldiers that get punished, we know their names right away.
Yeah.
If you get a traffic ticket on Fort Hood, they put your name in the on-post paper.
Wow.
So if one of these guys is named in an official report, which will quickly be subject to, for official information requests, it's going to get out there. Why you wouldn't name it? It's once again, they're trying to pull some sort of a PR scheme.
Yeah.
But that curtain's already raised.
Yeah. We got to take a break. We'll continue in just a moment with retired Army Sergeant Perry Jeffries. He's a member of IAVA. And that's Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. If you have a question or comment, we're talking about the Pat Tillman case. Call me now, toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. You're in tune with the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to the new KRXA 540. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth.
Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares. The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli, with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family.
Locally owned, the Ugly Mug Coffeehouse in Soquel Village. Always lively, always wired. We serve the best organic, shade-grown coffees, loose leaf teas, original bar drinks, and delectable goodies in a friendly community atmosphere. Open every day, 6 a.m. till 9 p.m., complete with music, Wi-Fi, and the craziest regulars in Santa Cruz. Meet your friends or just bring yourself to the Ugly Mug, Soquel Drive at Porter Street, for lively conversations and the best cappuccino in town. Hey, what do you want? Ray of frickin' sunshine? Delicious.
The Ugly Mug, Soquel Drive and Porter Street in Soquel.
Aloha, I'm Jay.
And I'm Ginger.
And we would like to invite you to our family restaurant at Pizza Paradise, serving the biggest, best, and boldest pizzas from our Marina location at 215 Reservation Road. It's in the Marina Village Shopping Center across from Wells Fargo Bank. Try one of our specialty pizzas like the Ginger's Island Paradise, or for the meat lovers, a Meet Me in Paradise. We're open Tuesday through Sunday and offer a banquet room for up to 80 people. We deliver to Marina and CSUMB.
Call 582-9149.
It's a Pizza Paradise.
That's 582-9149.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has three locations to serve you better wherever you live. All three locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or, in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service full service.
Guilty plea by a detainee at Gitmo, an Australian. That occurred yesterday. We'll get the lowdown, as I say, about 10 minutes away. We continue now our discussion of the Army and Pentagon's bungling of the issues related to Pat Tillman's death in combat. Perry Jeffries is with us from Iraq, Afghanistan, Veterans of America. Their website is iava.org. And we're joined by Xavier from Santa Cruz. Hello, Xavier.
Hi.
Good to talk to you. How are you doing today?
Excellent. Thanks. How are you?
Okay.
Good. I just wanted to, I've heard a number of different places. One, earlier today on the air on your station, that this was not an accident, that Pat Tillman was shot in the face and chest, that he, prior to being shot, that he sent out a purple smoke flare, which is specific to the, I believe it was the Army Rangers that he was in, and that they should have known that it was him. And he also jumped up, and I'm not going to say the exact words, but it was Pat effing Tillman, he shouted out. And they ignored all that and continued firing. Is there? I haven't heard that your guest address that at all. Is that?
All right, Perry, your comment.
I tell you, I was not on the ground with those guys, and I've seen people shoot at each other in anger. So, I think that the Rangers unit that he was with is very aggressive. We know that there were tactical mistakes made in splitting up the unit, but I don't think anybody has accused anyone of murdering him for any reason. And I can tell you from experience that once you start shooting, you can have all kinds of screaming and whistles blowing. We used to use whistles.
So you've not heard any of that? Are you certain that
it's already over with?
Go ahead, Xavier.
You've not heard any of those, like the purple smoke flare and the comments that he uttered? You haven't heard any of that evidence and know where it came from, whether or not it's true?
I've heard some words about that, but it's usually somebody supposing something about Pat Tillman because he was a fan of Noam Chomsky. He was not a fan of the administration.
Right.
And I really can't go for that larger conspiracy that some, you know. And honestly, I think if one of those Rangers had done that, we'd have heard about that by now, and they'd have hauled that person up, and we'd been done with it.
Okay, I just wanted to put it out there because I'd like to get to the bottom of it.
Gotcha, Xavier. You know, I have read in accounts the quote that you offered, that he did scream, "It's Pat effing Tillman." But I don't know, you know, the detailed context. And like Perry, I acknowledge freely that I wasn't there, and so we have to rely on these accounts. And given the tortured process that brings us to the very unsatisfying report that was released in part on Friday and then finally yesterday, I think it's fair to say we're still trying to get to the bottom of it.
Gotcha. When you don't know the truth, that certain details can be blown out of proportion. And it may be painful, but it's the truth. And if they would just say the truth, then you don't start to contrive all these scenarios that could have taken place because they kept lying about the other parts.
Yeah. Perry, anything else you want to add about the Tillman case?
No, I just think that, you know, this thing is a symbolic of some of the leadership that we've had, that instead of taking the hard right early on, they took what they thought was the easy way, and rather than just fix it or admit there was an issue, we continue to cover up in a pretty amateurish way.
Mm-hmm.
And they just need to tell the truth, do the right thing, and then it will work out.
Yeah. Perry, I wanted to get your reaction to this, and my source doesn't want to be identified, but he worked at the Pentagon a couple of decades ago, and he sent me an email that reads that professional military insiders at the Pentagon are worried about our broken Army Marine Corps. The drug and alcohol abuse among Iraq, Afghan GIs and jarheads is as bad or worse than in the Army Marine Corps during the Vietnamese War, and that's when this man served. Is this accurate? There's a story in the New York Times last week that suggests that we have a pretty serious problem of GIs getting high in the war zone.
I don't think the numbers are completely accurate, but they're certainly moving in the wrong direction. And the armed services have made some judgments that I don't think were the best. They've allowed more moral waivers. They've had to lower the standards on recruiting. And as guys spend longer in the war zone and the leadership is more stretched, certainly some of them do turn to substance abuse.
Mm-hmm.
We've had some real issues with certain units. Other ones have performed stellarly. And I can tell you, when I was in Iraq, literally every seven-year-old kid is trying to sell your soldiers some kind of liquor or cigarette or pill. You don't even know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And a certain percentage of those people are going to take that.
Yeah.
And when they're not real sure what's going on, you know, that percentage probably raises.
All right. I want to squeeze in another call before we run out of time.
Yes.
Richard in Santa Cruz, go right ahead. You're on the air with Sergeant Perry Jeffries.
Hello, Sergeant. Thank you for your service. And Peter, how are you today?
Doing okay. Just got a few seconds. Go ahead, Richard.
You know, I heard on NPR, Mary Tillman was on NPR this morning. She said the Army, that when they were giving her the information, that they told her family they were being abusive, believe it or not. I think the common thread here is lying throughout this whole administration. I think Rumsfeld probably has his fingers all over this. And can this general be called in front of the Senate committee?
The easiest way, you know?
Go ahead, Perry. I'm sorry.
It's just a shame when the truth is not the easiest way for our leadership. They just need to tell the truth.
Can this general be called in front of the Senate?
I don't know about the at a certain level they're confirmed by the Senate, but I think they got to go through the Secretary of the Army and his own chain of command first. It'd be nice to see, you know, Acting Secretary Guerin or General Schoomaker just step in and do the right thing.
I think this goes all the way to the top.
Might tell him to, like he did with Walter Reed.
Richard, thank you for your call. And Perry, thanks for joining us. Thank you, too, for your service.
Thank you very much for helping get the word out.
All right, we'll talk again. IAVA.org. I'm Peter B. Collins. Michael Ratner joins me next.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
For over 30 years, I have been helping people restore their skin's natural beauty. This is Claudie Assalit of Claudie Skincare Studio in Carmel. I bring a certain je ne sais quoi as well as 3 decades of experience in top spas and salons. Claudie Skincare Studio features a selection of the finest products, and I am always training to stay at the cutting edge of skincare technology. At Claudie Skincare Studio, we specialize in healing facials, peels, Reiki, waxing, lash tinting, as well as nutritional advice to ensure your skin vibrancy and good health. To set up an appointment, call me Claudie Assalit at 625-4101. That is 625-4101. Smooth, soft, beautiful skin can be yours. Call 625-4101. A bientôt.
Attention all KRXA listeners. Are you worried about not having enough money for a truly comfortable retirement? Were you aware that you've had the ability to buy real estate within your individual retirement account without government penalty since 1974? Bet you didn't know that. Only 2% of the U.S. population is even aware of the law. If your IRA had been invested in California real estate 20 years ago, you'd be a multimillionaire today. The retirement specialist will show you how to purchase California property right inside your IRA. They've helped nearly 10,000 people in the last 4 decades achieve their retirement goals by rolling over their IRAs and 401ks into profitable California real estate. Give them a call at 831-794-8485 to learn more about this underutilized retirement investment. That's 831-794-8485. If you want to achieve financial independence by the time you retire, then call now. There's nothing to lose, only valuable knowledge to gain. Call 831-794-8485 and ask for the retirement specialist.
I'm getting a catcher's mitt.
I'm getting ice skates.
I'm getting a jigsaw puzzle.
I'm getting dying coral reefs.
A blue bicycle.
A walkie-talkie.
I'm getting a severe drought.
Cool black skateboard.
I'm getting melted ice caps.
A killer heat wave.
A shrinking glacier.
I'm getting a devastating flood.
Adults are generous. We're even giving kids global warming. But it's not too late. We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. Go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.
The following is a test of the emergency alert system in accordance with regulations of the Federal Communications Commission. This station is testing its emergency alert system equipment. This is only a test. This has been a test of the emergency alert system. We now return you to regular programming.
This is Frank Don. On Sunday evenings at 7 p.m. here on KRXA 540 a.m., join me for Frank Don's Astrology Hour, a live call-in program to discuss astrology, the astrology of the world, and your own personal astrology. Let me answer your questions, and let me teach you how astrology can help you make better life choices. Here on KRXA 540 a.m. from 7 to 8 every Sunday evening, join me for Frank Don's Astrology Hour.
The Billy Sunshine Show.
Billy Sunshine Show.
Sunday at 3 o'clock, we're going to be doing something new, something different, or we'll do the same old thing, take your phone calls. One thing we know for sure, I'll have something to say. What? I don't know. I never know until I've said it. Find out what's the next thing to come out of my mouth.
The Billy Sunshine Show.
Sundays from 3 to 5. 3 to 5.
On AM 540. KRXA.
It's not a coincidence we're at the extreme left side of the dial.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
Mm-hmm. We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're invited to participate whenever you like. Just pick up the phone and call me toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. If you listen to this program, you know that I believe that Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, and the other sites of the Gulag Americana established by the Bush administration are a low watermark in American history. I not only deplore their existence, I'm deeply embarrassed by the way our nation has publicly debated over what forms of torture are now acceptable. And unfortunately, there's been precious little debate about the prison itself at Guantanamo Bay. And we've heard recently that there's some internal debate inside the Bush administration that incoming Defense Secretary Robert Gates said, let's close that thing, and Dick Cheney overruled him. And despite public pronouncements by the president that he'd like to close Gitmo, I don't believe a word of it. And over the last few weeks, we have seen, as things got tighter and tighter in Washington for the Bush administration with the various scandals, the Scooter Libby conviction, followed by the Alberto Gonzalez flap and the firing of the U.S. attorneys for political reasons, that Karl Rove's efforts to distract us have reached new lows. As we've seen a series of alleged confessions delivered by a Pentagon transcript with very little validation, trying to persuade us that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and others have admitted their crimes. And in KSM's case, he takes credit for things that he could not have possibly had a role in. So we turn now to Michael Ratner, the president of the Center for Constitutional Rights. They've taken a leading role in defending our rights as citizens and defending our Constitution from the assault and the undermining of the Bush administration. And Alberto Gonzalez has had a key role, first as White House counsel and then as attorney general, in developing the torture policies and propelling forward the darkest elements of the Bush administration's strategies. Michael's been president of CCR for many years now. He serves as co-counsel in the Roswell versus Bush case, the historic one currently before the U.S. Supreme Court. And his book is called Guantanamo, What the World Should Know. Michael Ratner, welcome back to our program today.
Peter, it's always good to be back with you.
This is a very interesting case of David Hicks, and it's just before I signed off last night, I was talking about it with a caller, and I knew that the hearing was underway at Guantanamo, but I didn't realize, for example, that at 6 o'clock Pacific time, they were just wrapping up an evening session. Tell me what you're able to in reconstructing the events of the day, because there were several breaks, and it appears that a lot of deliberations were going on outside of the hearing room.
Well, you know, it's interesting. David Hicks was actually the first client of mine in the Center for Constitutional Rights in January of 2002. He's the one, really, we took the risks with of saying we're going to go after the Guantanamo issue and habeas corpus and the right to go to court. And here we have 5.5 years later, still in prison, finally pleading guilty to this charge of materially aiding a terrorist organization in front of what's called a military commission, one of the new, and I would use the quotations, courts, because that's not what this is.
It's a kangaroo court.
It's a kangaroo court, in which he pleaded guilty. And so what really has happened here? I mean, the first thing that happened is they used David as the first sort of guinea pig to try and test this kangaroo court to claim that it had some kind of validity. And so they charged David. Initially, they charged him a few years ago with some very heavy charges, you know, attempted murder and some other things. In this new incarnation, after the Supreme Court said that, well, they couldn't do what they did before, there was no such thing as a conspiracy under military law, plus the kangaroo courts were too kangaroo-y even for the Supreme Court, they went back to Congress and they have a set of new rules for the military commissions, which is the new rules under which they are now attempting to try some people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they've only charged three people, David being the first, and he's the only one that's gone public so far. The other 380-some people we represent at the center with other attorneys have not been charged, and probably most of them never will be. So what happens is David gets a military lawyer, a very, very aggressive, strong lawyer named Dan Morey.
Michael.
Captain.
Michael Morey.
Michael Morey, but I call him Dan, but his official name is Michael. That's
okay.
Right. His nickname is Dan. That's correct. You got it, Peter. And he's been very aggressive speaking out on the kangaroo nature of the courts and, of course, being heavily criticized by the government people for doing so.
Well, and he's gone to Australia several times where they understand kangaroos.
That's correct, and where it's really turned the tide in Australia. Not enough, but turned the tide so that the Australian people and had put Howard, who's the Prime Minister, in a very difficult position as to why he wasn't fighting for the rights of his citizen, whereas the British had fought for the rights of their citizens and got them out. So here we're sitting now with David Hicks, charged with one count of materially aiding a terrorist organization. He has this military lawyer who's very strong, and he has a very strong New York civilian lawyer named Josh Stratel. They go down to Guantanamo. They begin this case in front of, you know, military judges with this charge. And the first thing that happens is David Hicks has been there for 5.5 years with no trial. The first thing that happens is he goes into court with his military lawyer and two civilian lawyers, one that's been appointed in addition to help Michael Morey with the trial.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing they do is the judge excludes both civilian lawyers from the courtroom. David's sitting there. And the first one, Josh Dreitel, is kicked out of the courtroom because he wouldn't sign a piece of paper that said he will obey every rule, not only the ones that are currently in front of him, but any ones that come down in the future. And he says, how can I sign that and have an ethical obligation to my client to know what the rules are before I sign them?
Mm-hmm.
And it may be that if I have to sign this kind of rule, I can't actually represent my client because you may restrict me from actually having private visits with my client and other things.
Mm-hmm.
The judge says, you're tough luck, out. The other lawyer says similar kind of things. It's a slightly different issue, but kicks out the other civilian lawyer.
And wasn't the other lawyer rejected because he or she is on the Pentagon payroll and there's some arcane rule about that?
Exactly right. She's like some civilian lawyer on the Pentagon payroll. He was wrong, the judge, but he kicks her out.
Okay.
So then you have Hicks sitting there. He's been in prison for 5.5 years. They've been to the Supreme Court twice. His lawyers have just been kicked out. His father described him as very depressed, and he's being abused, according to at least verbally, by some of the other inmates there. And the guy only wants to get back to Australia. And in that situation, the guy decides, well, and they make a deal, obviously. The Australian government finally gets a little gumption and says, okay, well, if David gets sentenced, he can serve a sentence back in Australia. So apparently that's the deal. David takes this plea to this materially aiding a terrorist organization. He hasn't been sentenced yet. He can get up to 20 years. If there's a sentence, whatever it'll be, he'll serve that sentence back in Australia. It's my view that he'll do very little time in the end in Australia,
mm-hmm.
for lots of reasons having to do with the whole nature of this complete kangaroo outrage from beginning to end, from the day they put them into Guantanamo to the day of that guilty plea yesterday. It's such a human rights outrage from any point of view that it's completely shocking.
Now, Michael Ratner, if you could take a moment here to describe how different it would have been if David Hicks had been properly tried in an American federal court.
Well, he could have been tried. That's the thing. Think about what the charge is here, Peter. The charge is materially aiding a terrorist organization. There have been a dozen cases like that in American federal courts. It happens all the time. It's the most common post-9/11 charge for people who the United States believes are somehow involved in any kind of terrorism. So he could have been tried in an American court, but he wasn't. And why, when they charge other people who have similar kinds of things? And, you know, what it seems to me is a couple of things are going on. One is there seem to want to establish another system of injustice in this world or in this country in which the president can decide, well, you, I'll decide today, we'll try an American federal court, and you, I'm going to give many less rights. I'm going to pick you up anywhere in the world, and I'll take you to some kind of kangaroo court in Guantanamo and try you on a trumped-up charge that isn't even allowed to be tried by a military commission because there's only war crimes can be tried, and this isn't a war crime. And I'll deny you your right to a civilian attorney, and I'll railroad you to justice. And that's the decision they made, the government made, for David Hicks. And I've objected throughout to this whole idea that you can pick up alleged terrorists around the world and then put them into some kind of a dead-end kangaroo court system rather than try them as alleged criminals for,
mm-hmm.
under our laws.
Now, as I understand it, David Hicks, even before the plea was entered yesterday, has acknowledged, or at least it's been proven, that he attended an Al-Qaeda training camp. But beyond that, I have seen no evidence, referred to or described that indicates that he ever picked up a gun or made any move to implement the training that he received.
It's correct. What they began with an indictment year, or charge a few years ago with, attempted murder and all that. All that's gone. The most they have now is the claim that he was trained in a Al-Qaeda training camp, and he never actually did anything, and never even got to the when the war was going on with the Taliban against the United States. He was supposedly going to fight on behalf of the Taliban. But he never did that. He never got there. He got picked up by some warlord or somebody, not even by the United States, prior to even getting there.
Mm-hmm.
So you basically have a very, very, you have a very, very thin, extremely thin charge here, and that's what you have. And it's thin to put it mildly. There's no hostile act against the United States, no act of terrorism. Thousands of people probably went through those camps. They weren't necessarily terrorists. Many of them may have been trained to fight alongside the Taliban when the country was invaded. Are those guys terrorists? Not really.
Mm-hmm. And was David Hicks sold for bounty to the United States by a warlord in Afghanistan?
I don't know that particular thing. I do know he was not picked up by the United States, but was picked up by a warlord, the Northern Alliance.
Mm-hmm.
Whether money changed hands or not, as it did for 90-some percent of the Guantanamo detainees, we think.
Right.
Whether changed hands for David Hicks, I don't know. He also alleged that he was heavily abused when he was picked up. He was taken to Kandahar. He was taken onto a ship. He was helicoptered off. He had the heck beaten out of him at different places. Went through all of that.
Mm-hmm. And you know him as Dan Morey, but Major Michael Morey, I've never met the guy, but I've been reading about his efforts, and he really seems to be a true believer in the American Constitution, a man who believes that he has a role to serve honestly and effectively as defense counsel for this defendant. And yet he's been vilified by the military lawyers and even has had to tilt repeatedly against the judge in this case at the so-called tribunal yesterday, Colonel Ralph Coleman, and he's a Marine judge. Tell us a little more about Major Morey.
It's hard to describe what this military and what this government is doing to people like Major Morey. Here you have a guy, he's in his uniform, he was a prosecutor in the military, as many people are when they do this, their defense counsel, they go back and forth. He gets this assignment to defend somebody in a system that he, after he looked at the system, decided was completely illegal. Contrary to everything he learned as a soldier about Geneva Conventions, about fair trials, and I actually traveled with Major Morey on some of our trips. Went to England, he stood there in his uniform, and he said to everybody out in the audience, he said, look it, if we're going to convict people, I want to convict the right people and not the wrong people. And the system we're using that they call justice is almost guaranteed not to get the right people because the evidence, anything can come in, there's no protections for the defendant, and these are kangaroo courts. And that's what he said. He said it there, he said it in Australia. And, to the credit of our country, he was allowed to say it for a long period of time.
Mm-hmm.
To the discredit, of course, anybody in his position or any other of the military council have now been passed over for any kind of promotions as a form of punishment. But in addition, Major Morey was heavily, heavily attacked over the last couple of weeks. And I don't just mean, criticized by the judge. He was attacked by the prosecutor who said, what Major Morey has done here may be a chargeable crime under the Uniform Code of Military Justice. He's demeaned our justice system. He's demeaned the president. And this is disrespect under our military law, and I think that it's conceivable he should be charged with a crime.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, think about it. You're Major Morey. What are you thinking? If I want to do vigorous defense, and I think vigorous defense depends on me going public and denouncing what I consider to be kangaroo courts, yet at the same time I'm facing my own possible indictment, doesn't that put me as a counsel in an impossible conflicted position? Because to do my legal duty to my clients, I'm going to have to be frightened of the fact that I'm going to be indicted, and maybe it's going to hold me back from doing my legal duty. And Major Morey talked about that, but I guess in the end he decided he could just withstand it and went forward. But I have to tell you, the attack on Major Morey, who, if you had a name like of this post 9/11 period, we can name a dozen American heroes here. Major Morey is certainly one of them.
We're going to take a break and return with Michael Ratner from the Center for Constitutional Rights. If you have a question or comment, now's the time to bring it on. Toll free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. I'm your humble host, Peter B. Collins. You're listening to KRXA 540. Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Pour me another tequila, Sheila.
Here's what people are saying about the hottest new show in town.
Joe, thank you so much for being here.
I want to wish you the best of luck with this. I think it's a great service.
Hey, drink up, all you people.
12-Step Talk Uncensored, where we take the shame and blame out of addiction. Join me, Sheila Gale, Saturday afternoons, 4 to 5. 12-Step Talk Uncensored. It's about time.
The healthcare system is broken. That doesn't mean you have to be. Capitola Physical Therapy helps you return to the level of function you need with skilled personal attention. Whether it's golf, tennis, walking, or simply getting out of bed and maintaining your balance, Capitola Physical Therapy understands, cares, and knows how to help. Call Capitola Physical Therapy at 475-1200. That's 475-1200.
So it means that our investigation turned up nothing.
Did somebody testify by him before a grand jury? Doesn't mean he's involved.
It is flat out absurd. Bush was begging that governor on the Sunday before the hurricane hit to get people out of there and declare an emergency.
It's all crazy propaganda. The Joseph Goebbels Network.
Bush was on the phone with her. They were thinking about sending the military in because the state and local people weren't acting fast enough.
It is certain that some self-possessed judge somewhere will soon rule that three men are three women for me.
Yet Iraqis are united in a broad and deep conviction. 12 government ministries are currently under the direct control of Iraqis. I don't think that's too high a standard.
If you retire, you don't have anything to worry about. Probably say it three more times. See, in my line of work, you got to keep repeating things over and over and over again for the truth to sink in. Got to catapult the propaganda.
Live from San Francisco, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. 9 minutes away from the hour, we continue our discussion with Michael Ratner, the president of the Center for Constitutional Rights. Their website is ccr-ny.org. And I just encourage you, if you've got spare cash and this is something that you would be inclined to support, they could use your help. It's a nonprofit organization. They do a lot of great work. And ccr-ny.org is where you can find them on the web. Michael, would you, given the opportunity, have advised David Hicks to plead guilty to the single charge as he did finally last night?
You know, I was his attorney up through the habeas litigation, and then of course he got criminal attorneys for doing the cases in front of the military commissions. And you know, without meeting David and knowing him and discussing him and what he was underwent for 5.5 years at Guantanamo, and which was very, very difficult, obviously, everything, you know, from abuse to no charges and just with a hopeless situation, and then to seeing the judge exclude his two attorneys from the court, and to see the whole United States really stacked up against him, and then to say that he might be spending 20 years in Guantanamo versus getting back to Australia and possibly getting out much sooner. you know, you just don't know what's going on for them. And, you know, certainly, obviously, from a theoretical point of view, I think all these things should be challenged. And, you know, that these things are completely illegal, what they're doing. But from a personal point of view, mm-hmm. you can sort of understand the decision. He's facing going back to seeing his father, got to come to Guantanamo. He got to see his father, sister. And he sees the chance to go back, and then he sees a judge who's being completely outrageous, excluding this. I mean, Josh Trakel is one of the most important criminal lawyers in New York. He's one of our best criminal lawyers, and this two-bit, you know, judge who is, in my view, you know, probably not worthy of sitting on a bench, is excluding him from a trial that he has been representing David Hicks for 3 years in. So what are we talking about here? And David's sitting there, and he's in a complete isolated situation, isolated at Guantanamo. And what's the poor guy going to do?
I empathize. And when you look at what I call the Joe Stalin Torture Detention and Kangaroo Court Act, the Military Commissions Act of 2006, without habeas corpus, and that hasn't been fixed, Arlen Specter thinks the Supreme Court will fix it. I don't have his
same. I hate that argument. You know, these congressmen are such chickens.
Yeah.
They pass a law like that, and they said, oh, don't worry, the Supreme Court will fix it. We won the last case in the Supreme Court 6-3 when we got habeas in Razul. The last one we really won 5-4 in Hamden. So we're talking about holding on the right to habeas by one vote. Not very good, not very comfortable.
Yeah, and so facing all that, I can imagine, given this opportunity to essentially plea bargain, he took that. But it's still an uncharted set of waters here because of the way we've operated at Guantanamo. There's no assurance that he would get credit for time served, whether he continues to serve at Gitmo or is permitted to serve in Australia. Certainly the Australian authorities would have greater latitude once he is in their custody, but we can't count on any of this.
No, you can't, and he's taking a risk, obviously, a real risk. On the other hand, and I guess he felt just getting back to Australia, which whatever we think of Australia, we might be able to say it has a semblance of democracy, unlike our own country with regard to people like David Hicks and other Muslims in custody, and that they may understand the rule of law, and they may understand that this particular crime he pleaded guilty to, aiding a terrorist organization, is not even a war crime, and that the entire system was no good. And then when he gets back to Australia, if he gets into some court there, they may just throw the whole thing out. But I couldn't agree with you more. It's a risk. And he's faced, you know, he was looking at his risks. You know, he's seen the court twice strike down this stuff, the Supreme Court, but he's seen Congress twice override it.
Yeah.
He's seen the president now be able to get a military commission that got rid of his attorneys. He's sitting there for 5.5 years without any access to anybody.
Well, and you and I have far more information about these issues. Imagine what trickles down to him as a detainee there.
Yeah, and he sees what happened. He sees attorneys having come to see him. When we started seeing him, 2004, hey, guys, we just won in the Supreme Court. We're going to get habeas corpus rights. We're going to get to test your detention. They don't really have any evidence except a coerced confession. We're probably going to get you out. And then we see the Congress overrule that decision. Then we see the Supreme Court override that. Then we see the Congress override it again. Then they finally get him for a military commission. The guy's sitting here, what am I still doing here? I'm going to be here the rest of my life.
Yeah.
That's what I would be thinking if I were down there, if I were him.
Indeed. Jake in Arcata, join us. Michael Ratner and Peter B. on the air here. Go ahead.
Hey, Peter B. I'd just like to let Michael know how I feel about this. It seems to me these military tribunals are clearly unconstitutional, and they're very reminiscent of the sort of show trials that went on during Stalin's Russia. And, you know, my question is, isn't this just further proof that the war on terror really has become a war of terror? It's now a war against our civil liberties. And how can these military tribunals be considered legitimate in the first place?
You know, they're not legitimate. I mean, they were used during the Second World War, and when the Supreme Court first, and then there was the Geneva Conventions with that, which of 49, which then said you can only be tried before regularly constituted tribunals. That means tribunals that exist, because when you make up new ones, you bend the rules in favor of the prosecutor, and that's what these did. Then the case goes to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court says, well, traditionally, these kind of military tribunals, commissions, are only used really in the battlefield situation. What you're doing here isn't really battlefield. And then they give Congress a shot to correct it. So now you're talking about a situation which is really not looked at as legal under international law and even really under our domestic law, and yet they're going ahead with it. And I couldn't agree more with your statement about show trials. think that's what this is. They got, this is, you know, David Hicks becomes exhibit number one in a show trial. They get rid of, they make up the charges, they make up the court, they get rid of his attorneys, they get newspapers down there, they are allowed to use coerced evidence, and then they said, this is our show trial, David Hicks, example number one. Never lifted a finger in terms of any actual, you know, shooting or anything at the United States. That's what you got.
Jake, thanks for your call. I appreciate it. Michael Ratner, to you and all the attorneys at CCR, we really appreciate what you're doing. I want you to know a lot of people in America support you wholeheartedly.
Peter, and thank you for all the help you've given us over the years.
Our pleasure. We'll talk again soon. Michael Ratner, ccr-ny.org. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Come on in and you will see the Central Avenue Bakery. Smell the bread, try the scones. Everything's a taste, you want to take it all home. Vegetarian is a pillar affair. We make our meals in a kosher kitchen. I'll make mine falafel with hummus stew. A side of couscous and a baba ghanoush, yeah. Open at 7 every day. Have a cup of coffee or your morning latte. Come on in and sit right down. It's the friendliest place in town. Central Avenue Bakery. In PG.
For an unforgettable omelet experience, visit the Central Avenue Bakery today. 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey, PG.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
White House spokesman Tony Snow learns his cancer is back.
I hope our fellow citizens offer a prayer to he and his family.
More tainted pet food lawsuits and casualties.
I think we're seeing the tip of the iceberg on that.
I'm Barry Bagnato in Washington.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Bill Whitney. President Bush got the bad news directly from his press secretary this morning.
He called me from the hospital. He told me that when they went in and operated on him, they found cancer.
It's a recurrence. CBS News correspondent Mark Noller reports.
It's the fear of every cancer survivor that the disease returns, and it did for spokesman Tony Snow when surgeons removed a cancerous growth from his abdomen and found the illness had spread to his liver. But even the president expects Snow to wage an aggressive battle to survive.
His attitude is one that he is not going to let this whip him. And he's upbeat.
Snow survived a bout of colon cancer 2 years ago, and his deputy describes him as resolute to prevail this time as well. Mark Noller, CBS News, the White House.
Just days ago, Tony Snow was expressing sympathy for another public figure facing a second battle with cancer.
The biggest problem you have a lot of times with cancer is just flat-out fear. And when you see an Elizabeth Edwards saying, I'm going to embrace life and I'm going to move forward, that is a wonderful thing, because once you decide that you're going to embrace life, you become a much better patient.
Colleagues say Snow wants aggressive treatment. He's 51. He and his wife have 3 children. Now this.
Most people tune out radio commercials, so I'll go ahead and hurry this along. The all-new turbocharged 2007 Mini Cooper S motors from 0 to 60 in 6.7 seconds. Hurry to the Mini dealer nearest you to test drive the all-new 2007 Mini and find out for yourself why these blurry little speed demons are going so fast. And now with the remaining time, I'm going to break this pinata full of pocket change using a foot-long kielbasa. Anybody have a shovel? The 2007 Mini Cooper. Ridiculously practical, undeniably fun. Based on Mini test results.
Welcome to Burger Bonanza.
Yeah, I'd like an extra large spare tire and an order of love handles. Honey, what do you want?
Can I get a badonkadonk butt with a side of thunder thighs? Sure, please go forward.
What are you really getting in your combo meal? The new Subway Fresh Fit Meals fit into the American Heart Association's approach to a healthy lifestyle. Tasty low-fat subs, better for you sides, and a drink. Subway. Eat fresh.
Fat content refers to regular 6-inch sub on white or wheat bread without condiments that contain fat. See store for additional nutritional information, including sodium content. Products may vary. Subway is a registered trademark of Doctors Associates, Inc.
It's been 10 days since Menu Foods announced a massive recall of pet food, and the scope of the problem continues to widen. CBS News correspondent Barry Bagnato brings us up to date.
From Connecticut to California, angry pet owners and their lawyers are filing lawsuits against the maker of the tainted pet food, even though the exact cause of the contamination is still being determined. To get a true casualty count, the Veterinarians Information Network is now sending surveys to some 18,000 vets. Already 104 deaths have been posted on the group's website, far more than the number listed by the government. Network co-founder Dr. Paul Pion.
One thing that everybody's asking is, how could this happen and how could we prevent it from happening again? And I always tell people that dogs and cats didn't evolve to eat from cans and bags. We feed them that way for our convenience.
Barry Bagnato, CBS News, Washington.
At least one human has gotten sick. A woman in Ottawa, Canada, who noticed her dog wasn't eating and took bites of its meal trying to trick the dog into thinking it was people food. Elaine Larrabee says she suffered for 3 days with vomiting and foaming at the mouth. Despite a clear warning from the White House,
if this legislation were presented to the president, he would veto the bill.
The Senate, voting 50-48, has approved a bill that ties war funding to a target for withdrawing U.S. combat troops from Iraq by next March.
The narrow Senate vote following a House vote last week makes clear President Bush will be getting a bill to fund the war with a timetable for troop withdrawals attached. Illinois Senator Dick Durbin says he hopes the president listens.
I hope the president will heed this message from the Senate and the House, sit down with us, and come up with an orderly timetable for the return of our troops.
But the president says he will veto any deadline for withdrawing troops, and Republican Senator Lindsey Graham agrees.
Whatever mistakes the Bush team have made, and they are many, the Congress is about to make the greatest mistake of all.
Looking beyond that veto, though, the Pentagon will need more cash and can only get it if the President and Congress come to agreement. Bob Fuzz, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
In Iraq, the U.S. military says an American soldier and an American civilian working for a private contractor died in a rocket attack on Baghdad's heavily fortified Green Zone. A U.S. Marine was killed in Anbar province. The U.S. Navy is staging war maneuvers in the Persian Gulf. Officials say it's a message to Iran, but not a direct response to the recent seizure of British Navy forces. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
The following is a paid commercial message.
It's estimated that over 200 million people in the U.S. suffer from herpes-caused cold sores. There are many products on the market today. Relieve One Day Cold Sore Symptom Treatment is excellent because it relieves cold sore symptoms in just a day. Pain eases in minutes and other symptoms resolve in just 24 hours. Relieve is non-toxic, comprised of botanical extracts, and is 100% guaranteed. Millions of sufferers have found that Relieve works best for them. Only you can determine that Relieve is best for you. You can now buy Relieve at most major stores.
Wouldn't it feel great if just once someone said to you, hey, you know what I noticed? You're a really good driver. But no one does. They take your impressive skills for granted. Well, Progressive will tell you. They're willing to say, yes, you are a good driver, and we're giving you a special rate, a special lower rate. You could save over $400 when you switch, just for being a good driver.
Good driver savings from Progressive. Switch today at Progressive.com. Progressive. It's about you, and it's about time.
Progressive Direct Insurance Company and its affiliates, Mayfield Village, Ohio. Available everywhere but Massachusetts. Prices vary based on height.
Live, unscripted, and unrehearsed, of course. It's the unpredictable Peter B. Collins Show, originating from that dangerous liberal enclave, San Francisco. Call in anytime toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and add your voice to Peter B.'s America.
Coming up later this hour, Jason Leopold checks in. He's the investigative journalist at truthout.org. I'm going to get his comments on Max Frankel's story in Sunday's New York Times Magazine about the Libby trial. Max Frankel's a brilliant guy, but I got some real problems with this article. We'll detail it for you in about half an hour. The danger zone these days is the Iran-Iraq border, the waterway at the north end of the Persian Gulf there. And as you may know, on Friday, California time, there was an incident there. And it goes like this. A British patrol ship put out a couple of crews in Zodiacs, you know, those inflatable craft. And they went to detain and inspect a ship that was reportedly in Iraqi waters. And as they were examining that ship for potential contraband, I think stolen automobiles or something like that, they were in turn detained by a flotilla from the Iranian Navy. They were accused of trespassing on the international or the national waters of Iran. And now 14 men and women, it's one woman and 13 guys, and I believe it's evenly divided, seven British Marines and seven Navy members, are in custody of the Iranians. We get some commentary today from Professor Stephen Zunis. He's professor of politics at the University of San Francisco. He's on the advisory committee of the Foreign Policy in Focus project at the and Middle East editor there. He's also an associate editor of Peace Review and an all-around pretty good guy. Stephen, welcome back to our program today.
Good to be back, Peter.
Tell me your thoughts about this gunboat incident there between Iran and the British. And if this is a potential trigger point that the U.S. appears to have been looking for so it can justify some sort of military action against Iran.
It's probably not that big a deal, and it'll probably not lead to any military action. The British government, though, it is pretty much kowtow to a lot of America's controversial policies in that part of the world, has been decidedly skeptical about American threats against Iran, and would not want to see this incident be used as an excuse. At the same time, the British government, of course, is understandably upset about the seizure of its sailors and Marines. As the Shatt al-Arab waterway, we should remind listeners, is basically it's a river.
Mm-hmm.
It's not very. It's and the exact boundary between Iraq and Iran has been in dispute ever since the days of Saddam Hussein and the Shah. And where exactly it's supposed to be the deepest part of the channel is supposed to be at the boundary. So it's quite possible that in pursuit of this boat with the suspected contraband automobiles, that the British boats ended up crossing into Iranian waters, perhaps not. But it's not as quite as, so in other words, it's not like there was, you know, they were clearly within Iraqi waters and the Iranians out of nowhere mm-hmm. seized them. It was something that is debatable.
Well, and I'm a sailor, and I can understand that if you're sitting there in the water, it's very possible currents will cause you to drift in one direction or another. And I have my own sob stories of that happening to me in the San Francisco or the Sacramento River Delta. So I can understand that once they stopped the first ship and then were surrounded by the Iranians, that it's possible that without any attempt to move, they could have crossed over. And also, as you point out, it is a murky boundary. It's not as if there's a bright white line there that says cross this and you're in Iran.
Exactly. So, in other words, people who are trying to see if this is a big Iranian, plot that was planned way ahead of time in Tehran to provoke an incident, it's always possible, but I don't think very likely.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what is your current assessment, given the extension of sanctions and a new round of sanctions voted on by the UN Security Council that occurred, within 24 hours of this incident? Are they connected in any way?
I don't think so, but I think it's something that might want to embolden hardliners in Iran to drag out this incident perhaps a bit longer than they might otherwise, because Britain has been one of the more hawkish members of the Security Council in terms of pushing these sanctions. They're also, of course, concerned about the Iranian diplomats that are still being held without charge by U.S. forces that were seized several weeks ago in Mosul over the objection not just of the Iranian government, but the Iraqi government and the Kurdish regional government,
mm-hmm.
and a number of other incidents involving Iranian nationals. So any of this incident may have been kind of a spontaneous thing about a murky border. That doesn't mean there aren't elements within Iran that might want to exploit the situation to their advantage.
Do you expect there might be an offer to swap the Brits for the five Iranians from Mosul?
The Iranians are dropping hints of that, actually, a few days ago, though more recently they have they basically said we're just going to interview them to see if they crossed into Iranian waters accidentally or it was part of some or deliberately, which would imply that their release is just a matter of time and not necessarily something conditional.
Mm-hmm. On the Daily Show last night, Jon Stewart offered the analysis that Iran is suffering from middle child syndrome, that they got sandwiched in between Iraq and North Korea in the axis of evil speech, and that some of their behavior can be explained that way.
I think more likely the behavior can be explained because Iraq gave up its nuclear program, allowed inspectors back in. They were invaded and occupied anyway, whereas North Korea threw out the inspectors and started up their nuclear program, and their regime is still in power. And comparing these two, the Iranians figure, well, maybe we need a nuclear deterrent as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Stephen, I know that you spend some time monitoring press accounts in the Middle East. Are there any differences in the way this event is being described? I'm talking about the gunboat issue, but also the sanctions. Is Iran being viewed differently in the Arab world than it is here in the West?
Well, on the one hand, there's some governments, particularly the monarchies of the Gulf, that are wary of Iranian military power. It is by far the largest country in the region. Though this has been a concern that goes back many decades, prior to the revolutionary regime, back to the time of the Shah. So there's certain suspicion about Iranian intentions, and especially their ties to the Shiite minority and a number of the sultanates along the Gulf, especially Bahrain, where the Shiites are actually a majority, even though it's a the U.S.-backed monarchy is Sunni. At the same time, there is concern and editorial comment about why is it that Israel, which already has hundreds of nuclear weapons, is and has been in violation of U.N. Security Council Resolution 487, which calls on Israel to place its nuclear facilities under the trusteeship of the International Atomic Energy Agency, why has the United States blocked sanctions against Israel while pushing for sanctions against Iran? Similarly, Pakistan and India have nuclear weapons. They are in violation of UN Security Council Resolution 1172, calling on them to get rid of their nuclear weapons and long-range missiles. The United States has blocked sanctions there, in fact signed a nuclear cooperation agreement with India, and recently sold nuclear-capable jet fighters to both countries.
Mm-hmm.
So this double standard, I think, is something that is bothersome, both because they think this double standard is dangerous, both because they think it's wrong, but also they think it's dangerous because it just encourages the more radical elements in Iran and the more radical elements within their own society that are who are angered at Western hypocrisy.
Mm-hmm. Well, I share your concern there. Particularly, I feel that the very public deal with India last year, on terms that are very hard to enforce, really set a very bad example, and the kind of double standard or ultimate hypocrisy displayed by the United States.
Yeah, yes. In fact, it went against decades of non-proliferation policy by the United States. Basically, it's part of this idea of a nuclear apartheid, where the United States gets to decide which countries get to have nuclear weapons and which ones don't, which countries have to follow the law strictly to the letter, and which ones they can make exceptions on.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a break and continue with Stephen Zunis, professor of politics from the University of San Francisco. If you have a question or a comment, we're open to your call right now. Toll free, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. It spells out to 888-5-PETER-B. More in a moment, right here on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to KRXA 540. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens, he cares. The Grove Market in Pacific Grove is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Locally owned and operated for 37 years by the Higuera family, the Grove Market boasts the finest selections of just-picked conventional and organic produce our Central Coast farms have to offer. The Grove Market's full-service meat department specializes in the highest quality, choice, fresh-cut, and prepared meats. Local artisanal bakeries deliver breads and other delectable baked goods hot from the oven every morning. To perfect your gourmet home-cooked meal, choose from the Grove Market's outstanding selection of Monterey wines. The Grove Market features competitive prices, personalized service, and home delivery in PG and New Monterey. You can't go wrong at the Grove Market. So shop Monday through Saturday from 8 to 7 and 9 to 6 on Sundays in downtown Pacific Grove, 242 Forest Avenue, just above Lighthouse. The Grove Market, where the locals shop.
Every Sunday morning at 10, check out Rock Roller Real Estate, America's favorite real estate show. Learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are. Rock Roller Real Estate, every Sunday morning at 10. To be a guest, call 408-892-3376. That's 408-892-3376. For more information, stop by our website at rockrollerrealestate.com. Rock Roller Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
ZNS Auto Sales in Monterey, family-owned for 30 years, is where partnership works. Whether you're a first-time buyer and need a safe economy car, or looking for a truck or SUV or a classic, they have it all. Call ZNS before you make that final decision. ZNS open every day at 1179 Del Monte Boulevard between the Navy Postgraduate School and Lake El Estero. High-quality used cars at the very best prices. ZNS Auto Sales, where partnership works.
Hello, everybody. Let's take a look at traffic and get in the very latest. Good afternoon. All right, San Juan Bautista, Anzar Road at 101. We have a parked camping trailer. That would be a parked camper with a trailer partially blocking the roadway there, so be advised. Santa Cruz, other than that, let's take a look at seems to be CHP telling us that nothing else is going on. So let's give you some of that road work update that we mention often, like Santa Cruz Highway 1 southbound to Morrissey Boulevard on-ramp. The on-ramps and off-ramps shut down 24 hours a day, and that's going to last till May 1st, by the way. Also want to mention Southern Monterey County, the right lane on northbound 101 from San Ardo undercrossing to Paris Valley Road. The pavement that's shut down for pavement sealing work from 8:30 a.m. until 2:45 every day. That's through the end of this month. This report brought to you by Motel 8.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, and I remain your humble host, Peter B. About 10 minutes from now, Jason Leopold joins us. We're going to talk about that Libby article that Max Frankel wrote in the Sunday New York Times magazine. And a few other issues, too. We continue with Stephen Zunis, professor of politics at the University of San Francisco. And, Stephen, just your general assessment currently of the risk of a conflict with Iran. Do you think that things have dialed back a little bit in the last month, or do you feel that it's still a possibility?
It's definitely still a possibility. The United States is undergoing major military exercises in the Gulf. They are bringing in reported a third carrier group. There are additional reports of clandestine special forces operations within Iran regarding target selection. And Nancy Pelosi decided to remove a clause in the recently passed appropriations bill that would ban U.S. military action against Iran without congressional approval. So it's still a possibility. I say it's less than even, but not by much, I'm afraid.
The stripping out of the Iran clause in the Pelosi package, some people say, and I'm sorry if I'm sounding like Katie Couric on a Fox Fox Bender, but some analysts have said that she did so at the behest of AIPAC. Is that something you've heard?
Well, you know, certainly AIPAC was one of a number of groups that were pushing this, but there were also a number of hawkish Democrats who, on their own, didn't want to have that in, and perhaps to the point where they would have been reluctant to otherwise support the bill.
Mm-hmm.
Pelosi herself has made a number of pretty hawkish statements vis-a-vis Iran, and so perhaps she was not as enthusiastic about this clause as many of her colleagues in the first place.
Yeah. Well, and given that it appears that the Senate now, the Republicans in the Senate are just going to let that bill sail through and then permit the president to veto it, so it appears it's going to be an empty exercise in the end, but at least it would have been a statement from the House that we object to, you know, any military action against Iran without our approval.
Yeah. Yeah, and so it's disappointing that it didn't come through.
Mm-hmm. Shifting to another flashpoint in the Middle East, Condoleezza Rice appears to have been actually engaging in diplomacy recently, and Dateline Jerusalem yesterday, she's in talks with Ehud Olmert, the Prime Minister of Israel, and apparently he has agreed to hold new talks with Mahmoud Abbas, the Palestinian president. And this, of course, gets past the issues related to the participation of Hamas in the Palestinian cabinet. But he still is resisting the agendas that Rice is suggesting, particularly including issues like the status of Jerusalem.
Exactly. He's limited, very much the topics that they'll cover. Initial reports were that he was only interested in looking at humanitarian issues and Israeli security issues. But the fact is, the Israeli government has refused to engage in any substantive talks with the Palestinian leadership since Sharon came to power in early 2001, even before Hamas ended up getting a majority in the Palestinian parliament. And it was a shame, too, because in January 2001, the two sides came very, very close to a final peace agreement, much closer than they did at Camp David 6 months earlier. And they were very close to the international consensus of Israeli withdrawal from most of the occupied territories with some very minor and reciprocal border adjustments. No right of return for Palestinian refugees, but there would be compensation and ability to resettle in the new Palestinian state or other Arab countries. There would be strict security guarantees for Israel. Jerusalem would be a shared co-capital of both states. It was very, very close to that. Polls show a majority of Israelis and Palestinians would support such a resolution. But the Israeli, since the election of the more right-wing government, they refused to return to the bargaining table to talk about these kinds of issues. And the U.S. has backed Israel with its so-called convergence plan, which, while eventually perhaps allowing for some kind of Palestinian state, it would be basically a Bantustan-type situation where they are surrounded by Israel, non-contiguous Israeli control of all the crossings and the water resources and the airspace, and it wouldn't really be a viable state to speak of.
Mm-hmm.
So it's and unfortunately that is the model that is being pursued unilaterally with U.S. support in this peace agreement that came so close to in early 2001 seems like a distant memory.
Do you think that Rice is seriously engaged in an attempt to broker peace, or is this just window dressing to give a kind of PR veneer?
I'm afraid it's the latter, really, because you know, there's been no effort to press Israel to return to more serious negotiations. The Bush administration and a large bipartisan majority of Congress has gone on record supporting the Olmert's convergence plan. They have not pushed for the Taba-type agreement, even though it was the number of Israeli and Palestinian leaders on their own fashioned a draft peace agreement in Geneva based on that formula just a couple years ago. There was a resolution to support that, and I think it got maybe 50 signatures. didn't get very far in Congress. So, so once again, we're faced with a dilemma where the United States is taking this contradictory role of being the insisting that it is the mediator, the chief mediator of this of the peace process, while being the chief supporter of one of the two parties. In fact, the more powerful of the two parties. And
right.
That formula, there's no matter how many trips the Secretary of State, whoever makes to the region, things aren't going to progress very far.
Stephen, thanks for joining us. Always a pleasure to talk with you.
Mine as well.
Stephen Zunis from the University of San Francisco. Jason Leopold joins us next on the Peter B. Collins Show, produced by Katrina Rill. Brian Urban at the telephone.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
More inconvenient truth. This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. The Pat Tillman story was one of those tales of heroism that every war needs. Tillman gives up his NFL contract to defend his country after 9/11, goes to Afghanistan, and in 2004 is killed by the enemy while charging up a hill. He gets the Silver Star. Except now we know that he wasn't killed by the enemy while charging up a hill. He was killed by his own men while yelling at them to stop firing at him. He'd circled back to help his convoy out of an ambush, but was mistaken for the enemy, and the Army knew this, even as the speakers at his memorial service repeated the wrong story. The Pentagon has now apologized for that, saying there was a series of mistakes in reporting what happened and placing the blame on a number of officers, including four generals, who gave what's described as misleading or inaccurate information. It was a screw-up. Nobody lied. They just made mistakes. But the family suspects that Pentagon officials deliberately used Pat Tillman to create a feel-proud story from Afghanistan at a time when the fight in Iraq was turning ugly, an antidote to the Abu Ghraib pictures. They think the Army investigation was a lie. Of course, we learned over the last few years that no one in official Washington ever really lies. It's always a mistake. It's never a deliberate attempt to mislead. And unless you get the DNA, lies are almost impossible to prove. At least Pat Tillman gets to keep his Silver Star. Think of this as yet another reminder that in war, the first casualty is truth, and it too is usually the victim of friendly fire. And no one is ever quite sure how it died. Now this.
Welcome to Lardo's.
Yeah, can I get an order of spare tires?
Yeah, what size? Plump, chubby, or incredibly huge?
How about incredibly huge?
You want love handles with that?
Oh, yeah.
What are you really getting in your combo meal? The new Subway Fresh Fit Meals fit into the American Heart Association's approach to a healthy lifestyle. Tasty, low-fat subs, better-for-you sides, and a drink. Subway, eat fresh.
Fat content refers to regular 6-inch sub on white or wheat bread without condiments that contain fat. See store for additional nutritional information, including sodium content. Products may vary. Subway is a registered trademark of Doctors Associates, Inc.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated.
Who wrote that?
Mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
You got to keep an eye on those detectives. I'm telling you that right now. We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's time for our weekly visit with Jason Leopold. He's the investigative reporter at truthout.org. One of them now. Jason Leopold's also the author of News Junkie, a memoir of a young man. He's still a young man. And how's the book doing, Jason? I haven't asked you recently.
Actually, it's doing well.
Yeah?
I'm happy to report, and I'm also happy to report I will be working on a follow-up soon.
Really?
Called The Cover-Up.
Uh-huh.
And it's a natural follow-up to News Junkie. If anyone's, you know, obviously interested in the work of... me.
He ran out of adjectives in describing himself.
Yeah, you know, hard to do that.
And you're working on it now, so we'll see it next year, maybe?
Yeah, exactly.
Uh-huh. So, good. And are we in a fourth printing on News Junkie yet?
I wish, but maybe getting close.
Yeah. Okay, good.
You know, certainly a lot of the things I wrote about in about journalism in there in particular have been borne out by the facts that we've witnessed during the Scooter Libby trial, which reporters were up there. So I'm particularly happy about that.
Well, you and I have bonded over the whole CIA leak case and the Libby trial. And today I wanted to get your reaction to this piece, rather lengthy one, that Max Frankel published in the New York Times Magazine this Sunday. Now, I respect Max Frankel. I've interviewed him and met with him a few years back when he published a book. He has a distinguished history. He was the White House correspondent for the Times during the Nixon era, and he went on to become a top editor at the Times before he retired a few years ago. And this article, which is entitled The Washington Back Channel, reads, this is the little blurb on the intro, for decades, journalists and government officials have traded in a sort of information black market, manipulating one another and, to some extent, readers, too. It's not pretty, as the Libby trial revealed, but it's crucial. Now, I believe that in the end, Max Frankel comes off as an apologist for leakers, and he gave a pass to Karl Rove in this entire story that left me shaking my head.
Well, you know, exactly. And I'm not quite sure if Max Frankel has been able to embrace the entirety of this issue because, you know, let's face it, Karl Rove, Scooter Libby, Dick Cheney, whoever else is in this administration that is leaking information and obviously has leaked information to Judith Miller, they're not leaking information such as the Pentagon Papers. You know, they're not leaking something that's so explosive that needs to be reported on and that we have an administration that's keeping secret. If anything, what we're dealing with is a different type of leak, a leak of sort of information that, if anything, would benefit the administration.
well, and,
from getting
and,
published. And he does use the Pentagon Papers as an example, but I think that that is such a poor example.
Well, it's the other side of the equation, okay?
Yeah.
Ellsberg leaked the Pentagon Papers to try to stop a government from continuing illegal actions.
Exactly.
This is a case where government officials selectively leaked information to try to cover up their own illegal actions preceding and to try to limit the damage from revelations that would have undermined the whole cause for the war in Iraq.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, bringing up Daniel Ellsberg is a really important point, because the way he acted, his role, in a sense, was that of a whistleblower, whereas we have yet to see Scooter Libby or Dick Cheney or Stephen Hadley, anyone, act as a whistleblower.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a major difference. And to sort of, you know, suggest that we need this type of leak in order to get other leaks, it just doesn't fit together. It doesn't make any sense. And I think that, you know, in a post-9/11 world, if you will, journalism has really suffered, because we haven't had people like Daniel Ellsberg really come out. I mean, we've had Richard Clark, who has testified, and we had Paul O'Neill, who has testified to a certain extent, but we have yet to have someone give us a, you know, Pentagon Papers, and actually put their, not only their job, but their lives on the line to do that.
And we had Dan Ellsberg on the program recently because he published an essay in Harper's Magazine calling out people who are in the administration today to blow the whistle on Bush the way he did on Nixon.
Right, and he's been doing that for a long time, and I am happy to hear that he's continuing that. But, you know, to sort of wrap this all up and say all leaks are necessary, you know, you have to look at the times. The time, geez, I'm going to be quoting Dylan here, but, you know, the times, they are changing. And this is, you know, this it's different now. I mean, again, that's why I don't really feel that he has embraced the entirety of what took place. And, you know, the fact of the matter is, it's, you know, the New York Times was wrapped up in this trial, this leak. This whole thing, you know, heavily.
Well, and to be fair to Frankel, he was critical of Miller and acknowledged that she was a conduit for phony intel information from the White House. But he breezily dismisses much of this as just kind of business as usual.
Yeah. Well, you know, again, I would absolutely like, you know, would love to have a conversation with him and, you know, debate about this, because if this is business as usual, then basically we have an administration that's, you know, seems to be skirting the law in terms of, you know, if he's being literal in describing leaks of covert CIA operatives, that's a real big deal. And not something that I would just dismiss easily.
Yeah. Now, the Frankel piece, to be fair, is about the Libby trial.
Right.
And he focuses on the issues from that angle. Still, I cannot agree with the way he wrote Karl Rove out of the script, and that he didn't really provide adequate context in terms of the White House Iraq group that met in the vice president's office, that included Rove and a few other communications people. And, you know, to me, it suggests that he is somewhat in Rove's orbit, that this is a story designed to lock in Libby as the fall guy, explain things away by using the Armitage leak to a couple of reporters, and also Bob Woodward, and to basically just try to slough off any role that Rove may have played, and the fact that he had to go to the grand jury five frickin' times to straighten out his story.
Right, and you know, I was probably a bit generous when I said that Max Frankel does not embrace this story. What I should have said is Max Frankel, along with many other top journalists, do not look at this story through a microscope and every detail as they should. because what what people like Max Frankel, the common thread there is that they're very dismissive of the prosecution, of the all the activities, as you just stated, the White House Iraq group, what Rove was doing, what Hadley was doing, and, you know, just sort of look at this as if they had tunnel vision. This this trial, this investigation, you know, centered on the fact that very early on, before Patrick Fitzgerald, you know, took over, was this was an investigation to see if anyone broke the law in terms of knowingly leaking Valerie Plame's identity. That investigation morphed into a perjury and obstruction investigation because people like Libby, like Rove, and many others had lied on numerous occasions. That, therefore, you know, obviously hurting any chance of getting to the truth. And that is, in itself, you know, the cover-up. You know, I think that if Bob Woodward, back in the day, along with Carl Bernstein, were to simply dismiss, you know, the Watergate break-in as, you know, business as usual.
Or say, I'm saving it for my next book.
Right. We may never have, you know, I mean, because ultimately what did that look like when it first happened? That was just a break-in. But because they, in such painstaking detail, they stayed with the story, it obviously turned out to be a much bigger story, as we all know. So it sort of strikes me as odd that there's this cavalier attitude among people like Max Frankel and even Bob Woodward today, that it's, you know, well, Richard Armitage was the one who did this. I mean, if the media paid such close attention to this, as they did, you know, in the 70s during Watergate, we may actually have been able to have on the front pages, you know, real hard-hitting stories saying that the president knowingly misled the country into war, lied, and was involved in a whole host of scandals. Because ultimately, that's what this leak was all about.
Yeah.
It was about the fact that somebody, Joe Wilson, was calling the administration out on its lies that to lead the country into war. And instead, it's sort of just, you know, and when people try to really put a spotlight on that, you know, ultimately it turned into you know, who leaked first and that nobody should be prosecuted, it's only perjury. I mean, the fact is, I can tell you, Peter, that if the media were not dragged into this case, if there had not been 10 reporters on this story, I mean, on this testifying at trial, we probably would have a different attitude.
Mm-hmm.
But they're, you know, they were dragged into this. They played a huge role.
Well, and Jason, you and I have talked about this on a number of occasions, and one of the other key elements here that Max Frankel either missed or didn't care to include in his story really is the political angle, and it's two pieces.
Yeah.
One, that Rove and the team did everything they could to drag this out as far out into the future as possible, trying to get past two elections, and they succeeded largely in doing that. And that the politics of it, from their point of view, you know, were very clear to use the press as the wall that could not be penetrated. They never believed that Fitzgerald would be able to call these reporters.
Exactly.
They had a misinformed sense of a federal shield for reporters, but their guess was that they could buy a lot of time and that they would never be called on this because the shield of reporters would really prevent them from being identified as the leakers. And Frankel doesn't address either of those.
Yeah, I don't think he gets it. And I can just, you know, just to use an example here, the U.S. attorney scandal that has obviously, you know, been driving the news cycle for the past couple of months, look at the way the mainstream media is all over this story. I mean, they really are all over this story. And look at the way they treated the Valerie Plame story. Now, they're not involved in the U.S. attorney story. Finally, the media, the mainstream media, can tackle a story such as the U.S. attorney scandal because they played no part in it. The same thing with the weapons of, you know, of mass destruction. Iraq has those weapons of mass destruction stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They peddle that information and really wanted to downplay their own involvement in, you know, in pushing that forward. And here we have, you know, a story that really is, you know, all over the place. And the Washington Post is doing a very good job, and so is the New York Times.
Mm-hmm.
And it really sort of, you know, begs the question. Well,
we'll talk about that next. It's time for our break. But I want to just read the final sally here from Mr. Frankel. His closing paragraph. In loose translation, prosecutors of the realm, let this back alley market flourish. Attorneys general and others armed with subpoena power, please leave well enough alone. Back off, butt out. That's his rationalization of leaking. It's always been
right
there, and in general, he either sees it as a good thing or benign. We'll pick up there in just a moment. Jason Leopold, my guest, on the Peter B. Collins Show. KRXA 540, progressive talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
One Day Income Tax Service, family owned and operated since 1944, specializes in year-round professional tax preparation. Do you want your refund quickly? Stop by One Day Income Tax Service. They offer tax preparation at reasonable rates and work to meet the needs of military families with the capacity to process all out-of-state returns. If you prefer to prepare your own return at home, they can help you expedite your refund by filing your return electronically. Let One Day Income Tax Service assist you with your return and maximize your refund. Stop by 885 Broadway Avenue in Seaside, where no appointment is necessary. Looking for quick, professional, and reasonable tax return preparation? Visit One Day Income Tax Service, 885 Broadway Avenue, Seaside, or call 394-8010. That's 831-394-8010. One Day Income Tax Service, where you walk in with a copy of your most recent tax return, personal ID, and W-2 1099 info for 2006, and you walk out with your completed tax return.
Join me, Deborah Lindsay, each Sunday afternoon at 2 for Tomorrow Matters. We'll be matching the global problems of today with the local solutions for a better tomorrow. I'll bring in the guests, and you call with the questions and ideas, and collectively we'll set the standards for a more sustainable future, because for all of us, tomorrow matters. Join me right here on KRXA 540 AM for Tomorrow Matters each Sunday at 2.
Seize the day and save money. That's the slogan of Stardate Solar, a company providing you with the highest quality solar power for your Monterey Bay Area home or business at the guaranteed lowest price. And that's the idea behind the Stardate Solar Power Hour. I'm your host, Dale Julin. Every Saturday at high noon, our nationally known cast of energy experts will tell you the latest news about the coming solar economy. And you'll also hear about the politics of solar power as well. The Stardate Solar Power Hour, Saturdays at noon and at StardateSolar.com.
Had a very pleasant good afternoon to you. Let's take a look at the latest and tell you that we do have a problem. It is located in San Juan Batista. It's Anzar Road at just about 101. It's a parked camper, and it's still partially blocking the right lane there. CHP's apparently trying to move this as we speak. Salinas, looks like we have an accident reported northbound 101 after Spence Road. It is a pickup truck overturned. It landed on its roof, and it's actually on the right shoulder. CHP is on scene there. Monterey County, looks like Highway 68 westbound at Speca Road. We have the westbound lane completely blocked by an oak tree. We do have Caltrans crews en route to the scene there. This report brought to you by Welch's 100% Grape Juice. A diet rich in natural antioxidants is good for your heart, and Welch's 100% Grape Juice is loaded with them. Help protect your heart. Drink Welch's.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show. We'll dedicate that one to Judith Miller this afternoon. I couldn't resist. Jason Leopold with me here on the Peter B. Collins Show. He's from truthout.org. And, Jason, I understand that Patrick Fitzgerald had a meeting today with Alberto Gonzalez in Chicago.
He did, and it it was sort of interesting. The basis for this meeting was they were discussing something I want to say the sort of a No Child Left Behind Act, mm-hmm. but I'm not exactly sure. I'm sorry, it was Improved Child Safety on the Internet.
Oh, the Mark Foley problem.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And afterwards, they had a news conference. The meeting that he had with Fitzgerald was sort of this roundtable discussion on how to improve safety on the Internet for children. And then afterwards, you know, he was, they were holding a press conference, and he answered two questions very quickly and then raced away. And I mean that literally. He ran away, and one of the Chicago dailies has a video of it, which seems funny. I mean, you just look at it; it sort of, you know, reminds you of those cartoons
mm-hmm.
Where you see the characters running in place real fast for
right.
a moment and
yeah.
dashing off.
Now, did you see Saturday Night Live?
I did not.
Oh, they had a great opening sequence with a guy playing Bush who talked about his staunch trust in Alberto Gonzalez. And they got a guy who did a pretty good, you know, kind of facial lookalike of Gonzalez. And his eyes would, you know, light up when good things were said, and then the Bush character would say, "But if I find out anything happened, I'll fire him." And at the end of it, Gonzalez has slunk off the stage as Bush tries to turn over the podium
great.
To him. Yeah, it's pretty funny. Now, the status of this to me is interesting because you're correct. The mainstream media, the corporate media, is having a field day with this, and they've dug up some pretty good stuff. The Carol Lamb and David Iglesias characters have
sure.
delivered pretty well. But I find, and I mentioned this yesterday in our segment with Media Matters, Paul Waldman, that the corporate media is afraid to call a lie a lie.
Well, exactly.
And the major issue here is we've got him cold on videotape
right.
lying to the United States Senate under oath.
Right.
This is not, you know, a case that has to be proven like it was in the Libby trial.
Yeah, and you know, I really want to, like, stress again that post-9/11, things in journalism, you know, words that we used with no question before 9/11 have gone out the door. And instead of using the word lie, we use words, and I don't include myself in that, by the way, but I should say that the mainstream media uses words like mislead, contradicted.
Apparent contradiction.
Right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, despite the fact that they have evidence, you know, staring them in their face that questions, you know, their use of such words.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the only in their defense, I can say that, you know, a lot of these issues, a lot of these things that, and I faced it when I was working over at the Los Angeles Times and Dow Jones Newswires, is that oftentimes when you, you know, when you choose to use the word lie, it constitutes something in the legal area
mm-hmm.
where, you know, somebody could be brought up on charges. So oftentimes if you actually, you know, in your first draft of a story said, you know, he lied, what would happen is his story goes over to the legal department and, you know, media attorneys, you know, actually play a role in that.
Mm-hmm.
They vet stories like that.
Yeah, but this is a public figure. You couldn't prove malice
right.
on the part of the reporters.
Right.
I mean, it doesn't rise to the level of libel or slander.
Right.
And it's unfortunately a fact. It's a fact.
It's exactly. And it's, you know, again, it's as far as my memory is concerned, after 9/11, we chose our words very carefully in terms of how we were going to describe what this president is doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and not calling anyone out for fear of, you know, getting your neck, your head chopped off.
Yeah. Before we run out of time, I want you to expand a little bit on an article that you and Matt Renner posted a Truth Out yesterday.
Yeah.
About the way White House officials appear to have used other web addresses or email addresses
right.
than their official government accounts to send the problematic emails that they didn't want us to read.
Yeah. Peter, I'm going to tell you that this is going to blow up into a huge, huge issue, and it's actually going to expand into other areas because
Henry Waxman had, you know, obviously sent a letter to, that's what the story was about, sent a letter to the Republican National Committee and the Bush-Cheney campaign 2004, ordering them to preserve all these emails because it is in this document dump, the one email in particular by J. Scott Jennings, a special assistant to President Bush, was sent to a Justice Department official during the time of the firings of the U.S. attorneys using an alternative email account.
Mm-hmm.
And that alternative email account was gwb43.com. And Waxman demonstrated that this was actually used by Susan Ralston, a former aide to, former assistant to Karl Rove. And I should mention that Jennings, also his boss, immediate boss, is Karl Rove. And
Ralston used to work for Abramoff.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And showed that the they were doing a White House business that really would be could be called into question, some of the things that they were doing, and not leaving a paper trail.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that goes into, you know, a possible violation of Presidential Records Act, but in addition to that, it actually suggests that this is much bigger.
Yeah.
And I'm going to leave you with this. 250 pages of emails, if you recall,
mm-hmm.
that were not turned over to Patrick Fitzgerald for 2 years. It seems that the reason for that is that it was not sent via the White House.
People are talking about the show. Weekday mornings 9 to 10 on KRXA 540. Does it really suck less?
You guys are, in many ways, so self-referential that it doesn't let a guy like me feel like he can be part of the conversation.
We try not to be too self-referential, and we'll try to catch ourselves. I appreciate your call.
I wish I knew what that meant.
I wish I knew what that meant. Okay. But you're sucking less than you used to.
Down in Monterey.
Listen to broadcast journalist Glenn Brooks as he is joined by health crusader Lisa LaRose and Western Feng Shui master Ann Christie for One Wisdom, a program designed to bring you conversations that invoke your creativity, playfulness, and well-being. Saturday from 9 to 10 a.m. here on KRXA 540 a.m.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. For the second time in less than a week, a prominent figure is dealing very publicly with a recurrence of cancer. CBS News correspondent Mark Noller reports.
From the president on down, it's a blow to the White House staff. Exploratory surgery yesterday found that their friend and colleague, spokesman Tony Snow, has cancer again, this time in his liver.
My message to Tony is stay strong. A lot of people love you and care for you and will pray for you.
Speaking to reporters in the Rose Garden, President Bush said he hopes for the best and looks forward to the day that Snow is back at the briefing room lectern. Mark Noller, CBS News, the White House.
Tony Snow is 51. He's expected to start a new round of chemotherapy as soon as he recovers from surgery. Dr. Marie Borum is a cancer specialist at George Washington University Hospital.
I think it's important to know that it can be treated successfully if it is a small amount that's gone to the liver, if it's localized in certain sections of the liver, and if he gets the right treatment.
Word late today from the White House was that the cancer is attached to Snow's liver, but not in it. The House did it last week. Today, the Senate approved a timetable for withdrawing U.S. combat troops from Iraq. CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss reports.
Like their House counterparts, Senate Democrats, for the most part, favor a deadline for pulling troops out of Iraq, and attaching it to the bill funding the war is their best hope of achieving that. Vermont Democrat Patrick Leahy.
We have to remove our troops from Iraq Civil War.
But most Republicans, like Senator John Cornyn of Texas, are opposing the move.
We have no business micromanaging here from the halls of Congress, thousands of miles away from the battlefield.
Ultimately, the House and Senate have to agree on an Iraq funding bill, and if it has a troop withdrawal deadline in it, the president says he'll veto. Bob Fuss, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
A blunder by the Justice Department may have cost the taxpayers more than $100 million. In a plea bargain, telecommunications mogul Walter Anderson was supposed to pay restitution for engineering the largest tax fraud in U.S. history. But at sentencing today, the judge said the plea agreement was so poorly written he couldn't legally order Anderson to pay up. Anderson will go to prison for 9 years, and he has to pay $23 million to Washington, D.C. Paper or plastic? In San Francisco, there might not be a choice much longer. CBS News correspondent Steve Futterman explains.
By a 10-to-1 vote, the Board of Supervisors approved the ordinance, which bans the type of plastic bags used in most grocery stores. The measure prohibits the use of non-recyclable and non-biodegradable plastic bags by the city's largest supermarkets and drugstores. The man behind the measure is Supervisor Ross Mercurimi. He hopes other cities will take similar action.
We certainly hope that it will proliferate throughout the United States.
The measure takes effect in supermarkets in 6 months. Steve Futterman, CBS News.
The latest consumer confidence numbers are down, and that sent the market lower today. The Dow lost 71 points to close at 12,397. The NASDAQ down 18. This is CBS News.
This is Charles Osgood of the Osgood File. Is orange juice part of your morning routine? I switched to Welch's 100% grape juice because it has twice the antioxidant power of orange juice. You may have heard a diet naturally rich in antioxidants is good for you. Not only does drinking Welch's 100% grape juice help promote a healthy heart, but emerging research suggests it may help to protect memory and brain health as well. And it's nice to know Welch's is made from Concord grapes grown right here in America by Welch's farmer owners. So drink Welch's 100% grape juice for an unmistakably delicious way to add antioxidants to your diet. This is Charles Osgood. See you on the Osgood File.
Hello?
Hey, this is your cell phone.
Huh?
You know, you treat me like a kid.
What?
Oh, sure, you've cut the cord, but you don't realize how much I've grown up. I can do speed dial, text messaging, voicemail, video, wireless internet.
Yeah.
I can even help you keep your kid off drugs.
Keep my kid? How?
You talked to your son about not smoking marijuana, right?
Oh, of course.
Well, some other people are telling him something different. Here, let's send him a text message. Ask him what he's up to.
Good idea. Let's do it.
Staying in touch. The Anti-Drug. Learn more at theantidrug.com.
Paid for by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Israeli marijuana lovers might have to abstain next week. CBS News correspondent Robert Berger explains.
Israel's pro-marijuana party has made a sobering announcement. Pot is not kosher for Passover. While biblical law only forbids eating leavened bread and other yeast products during the week-long holiday, European rabbis later extended the law to include beans, corn, and hemp, the source of marijuana. So while some Jews make their pots kosher for Passover, others will get rid of their unkosher pot. Robert Berger, CBS News, Jerusalem.
The pornography was sickening, at least to goats. Last Thanksgiving, two men in Mayopac, New York, broke into a barn, spray-painted three goats, and left pages of porn magazines scattered on the floor. Some of the goats got sick after eating the paper. Charges have been dropped. The men agreed to donate $1,000 each to the local Humane Society. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
Most people tune out radio commercials, so I'll go ahead and hurry this along. The all-new turbocharged 2007 Mini Cooper S motors from 0 to 60 in 6.7 seconds. Hurry to the Mini dealer nearest you to test drive the all-new 2007 Mini and find out for yourself why these blurry little speed demons are going so fast. And now with the remaining time, I'm going to break this pinata full of pocket change using a foot-long kielbasa. Anybody have a shovel? The 2007 Mini Cooper. Ridiculously practical, undeniably fun. Based on many test results.
Welcome to Burger Bonanza.
Yeah, I'd like an extra large spare tire and an order of love handles. Honey, what do you want?
Can I get a badonkadonk butt with a side of thunder thighs? Sure, please go forward.
What are you really getting in your combo meal? The new Subway Fresh Fit Meals fit into the American Heart Association's approach to a healthy lifestyle. Tasty low-fat subs, better for you sides, and a drink. Subway. Eat fresh.
Fat content refers to regular 6-inch sub on white or wheat bread without condiments that contain fat. See store for additional nutritional information, including sodium content. Products may vary. Subway is a registered trademark of Doctors Associates, Inc.
Live from San Francisco, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Lively, informative, compelling, progressive talk radio. And it's interactive, too, which is a fancy way of saying he takes your phone calls. Toll free at 1-888-5-PETER-B. Fasten your seatbelt and let's take a ride in Peter B.'s America.
As we launch into the free speech zone today, you're welcome to call this program toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. We'll actually go to the phones in about half an hour, because after our next break, Emily Levy is going to check in with us and report on the progress of what's called the Holt Bill, H.R. 811, to fix our voting machine problems. So we'll open up the lines about half past, and you're welcome to call in and comment on any subject from any viewpoint from anywhere within the sound of my voice. And the toll-free number is 888-5-PETER-B.
first.
We are joined by Melanie Sloan. She's the executive director of CREW, Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, and she works just about 24/7 because it's a job that, unfortunately, will probably never be finished. Melanie, welcome to our program today.
Hi, Peter.
Good to talk with you. And we're going to talk about some of these emails related to Alberto Gonzalez and the sacking of the U.S. attorneys. And most often, from one segment to the next, we're changing subjects. But as it worked out, just a few minutes before the news came on, we were talking with Jason Leopold from truthout.org. And he and Matt Renner, our former producer, posted a story yesterday about the issues that you and I are going to discuss. And unfortunately, due to the vagaries of time, Jason's last words were cut off before he got to utter them, because the way the radio thing works is the stations take over at exactly a certain point, and he was still talking. So I want to finish his thought for him, and it's going to segue right into what we're going to talk about, Melanie. What Jason was saying when the clock cut him off is that there are a number of emails in the raft of them that have been released that were not sent via the White House email system. And this dovetails nicely with the issue that you have raised, that Henry Waxman has now taken up in a letter to the White House and other parts of the administration, and that is described in the Truth Out story that Jason and I were talking about before you joined us. So what is the legal issue here, Melanie, regarding the use of outside email accounts? I've got a Yahoo account, I've got a Hotmail account, and if I want to communicate with somebody who, you know, I don't want to have my main email address, that's what I use. But I'm not working in the White House, so I'm not subject to the same rules and regulations.
That's exactly right, Peter. You're not. But if you do work in the White House, there's something called the Presidential Records Act. And the point of the Presidential Records Act is to require all White House employees to maintain all the records of their time at the White House and their communications. And that particularly includes emails. And if you send an email from the White House on the White House's official email system, that email will automatically be preserved. It will be backed up, and it will be kept in a way that is consistent with the Presidential Records Act. And that's for history, so that we will know down the line exactly what kind of communications were made. And this has happened in several administrations, and interestingly enough, I'm going to be able to tell you first that we're sending a letter to Josh Bolton tomorrow over in the president's staff to say, you know, what is your policy on this Presidential Records Act, and what are you doing to maintain the documents that you're supposed to maintain? We have learned about the Clinton administration's policy, and the Clinton administration's policy was very clear. Every employee in the White House got a memo saying you must maintain only a White House email. You may not use an unofficial email system. You may not use Gmail. You may not use anything else. If you're going to send an email from the White House about an official matter, it's going to have to be on that White House system. So the question is here, did the Bush administration ever rescind that policy? Have they taken somehow a different tack? Because it's interesting, not only are we hearing this in terms of the U.S. attorneys, but we've also seen evidence that this was happening earlier with Jack Abramoff.
Right.
And it turns out that there were some email correspondence between both Jack Abramoff and White House officials, and between Susan Ralston and
go ahead and have a little sip of water there, and I'll fill for you. Susan Ralston, as we have mentioned, worked for Jack Abramoff, and when Karl Rove moved into the White House in 2001, he hired Susan Ralston. So she was clearly a go-between for Rove and Abramoff.
That's exactly right. Thank you, Peter.
Mm-hmm.
And there were emails that were released by the Henry Waxman's Government Committee on Oversight and Government Reform showing that there were several different email domains being used, the RNC's, georgebush.com, and AOL.com. And Ms. Ralston was communicating inside White House information to Mr. Abramoff in response to Mr. Abramoff's efforts to broker deals for his clients. And it came out at one point that Mr. Abramoff accidentally responded to a White House email account, and Mr. Rove told him not to do that because he was worried, apparently, that it would be preserved.
Mm-hmm.
And this becomes this issue, which is the Presidential Records Act issue, which requires all White House email to be maintained. So first we sent this letter to Henry Waxman saying, well, you know, they seem to be in violation of the Presidential Records Act. And we know this because the U.S. Attorney's and the U.S. Attorney's Office scandal, so much of the email that's been released indicates that Karl Rove was using an RNC account when he was communicating with Kyle Sampson, Attorney General Gonzalez's former chief of staff, to discuss the firing of U.S. attorneys.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like Karl Rove was deliberately trying to evade the use of the White House email system so that he would avoid detection and it wouldn't be kept. So now we know in two different circumstances, the situation with the U.S. attorneys and the situation involving Jack Abramoff, Karl Rove wasn't using the White House email. When else wasn't he using the White House email? And who else in the White House wasn't using it? I mean, basically, are all White House employees avoiding their responsibilities under this act by using other outside email accounts which nobody can track?
Mm-hmm.
And, for example, one question that comes up right away is, did Special Prosecutor Patrick Fitzgerald really get all the email he was entitled to in the Scooter Libby case when he was subpoenaing email from the White House because perhaps they were using RNC email accounts?
Yeah, very interesting. Now, while we're talking, I'm conducting a little experiment here. I just sent a test email to the account of Turd Blossom at gwb43.com. And so far, it has not bounced back. Now, Turd Blossom is W's nickname for Karl Rove.
So. Well, so, you know, it seems that Karl Rove has several different email accounts and that they used different email addresses that are all on the RNC server. But this is raising many more questions, obviously, than it's answering. Not only are we learning about this effort to evade the Presidential Records Act, which, by the way, you know, my organization generally sues people over their failure to abide by statutes like the Presidential Records Act. Unfortunately, the Presidential Records Act was written in such a way that courts have interpreted it to say that there is no judicial oversight, so nobody can sue about this failure to abide by the law. We're suggesting to Henry Waxman that he might want to change the law to allow a judicial oversight function here.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing this raises is this whole question of a pattern of this administration's insistence on secrecy and refusal to comply with the open records laws of the United States. We've had a lot of problems with the Freedom of Information Act getting the administration to respond to our FOIAs, and we've had to sue time after time after time, and they're trying to hide things. And now it seems that now they're also trying to hide the White House email. So what we're learning is that there's a long-standing pattern in practice. Nothing is accidental or incidental. It's all related, and there's a pattern of obstructing the open records the open records laws of the United States, and that's very troubling for historical purposes, if nothing else.
Yeah. Well, my experiment still doesn't have a resolution. The mailer Damon has not instructed me that that's not an active account. So I'll let you know if I get a response from turdblossom@gwb43.com.
Well, meanwhile, we can expect that Henry Waxman has asked the RNC to provide a lot more information about what White House officials are doing with their email system, and he has said that the RNC is to cooperate with his staff next week, so we'll be learning a lot more about that.
Melanie, when Jason was with us, he speculated that this could be the element of this whole scandal that really blows up big time. Do you share that thought? Or to me, the real core vulnerability is the flat-out clarity that Gonzalez lied to the Senate Judiciary Committee in January. That's on videotape. He was under oath.
Oh, well, you know, I think there's the two aspects. I am with you that the fact that Gonzalez lied and one of his top aides yesterday declared that she was taking the Fifth, one only takes the Fifth Amendment when they might be criminally prosecuted for lying, and so she didn't want to come before the Senate Judiciary Committee and tell the truth or because she could get prosecuted for that, and I guess she didn't want to come before them and lie. So she was in this conundrum. So I think Attorney General Gonzalez is in very deep trouble here, and I think that we will learn a lot more when his former chief of staff testifies in front of the Judiciary Committee on Thursday.
Right, that's Kyle Sampson.
That's right.
And he so far has not invoked the Fifth.
He has not. He has said that he is anxious to cooperate with federal investigators, with the committee, so we'll see if he falls on his sword for Attorney General Gonzalez or he tells the truth and talks about how much Gonzalez knew. Just for example, Gonzalez has said that he was uninvolved in the decision to fire the U.S. attorneys, but email has suggested that there was a meeting between Gonzalez and Sampson and other top Justice Department officials to discuss exactly that. So it's clear that Gonzalez lied.
Well,
the question is what Sampson will say.
In a softball interview that they played on Hardball last night, Pete Williams gave Gonzalez like 8 minutes to just give an open-ended answer to his critics. And it was a meandering piece where he tried to reconstruct events and say, well, yes, I did attend that meeting, but that's not what I was referring to when I said I wasn't involved in the decision.
What did he mean then?
Well, it's just going to get deeper and deeper, so we will follow this carefully. Melanie, thanks for your work.
My pleasure.
Talk to you next week. Melanie Sloan from CREW, Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. In a moment, we'll get an update from Emily Levy, who is in Washington lobbying about the Holt bill to fix the voting problems. And as you know, Brad Friedman and I think that it doesn't go far enough. We need a ban on those touchscreen machines, and that's not in the Holt bill. So we'll discuss that with Emily after a quick break right here on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
Pacific Grove Liquors is the one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wine, spirits, and beers at very reasonable prices. Whether you seek the ideal California or imported wine, quality distilled spirits like top shelf tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and premium vodkas, PG Liquors is your beverage outlet. Love beer? PG Liquors boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales and lagers, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand your wine, beer, and liquor store.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Concerned about the steady increase in home mortgage interest rates? Don't panic or overreact. Now is the time to analyze the many available options and to choose the best possible course. Leverage the equity in your home to reduce or eliminate high interest and non-deductible debt. Victor Munoz, president of Creative Mortgage, invites you for a free consultation in his Salinas offices at 201 John Street. To schedule your free Creative Mortgage consultation, call Victor at 757-0436 right now. That's 757-0436.
All righty, let's take a look at the very latest and give you a little update here.
Let's look at what's happening in Monterey County. Highway 60, looks like this is Highway 68 westbound after Laguna Seca. It's the westbound lanes are completely blocked because of an oak tree. Now, CHP is conducting traffic control there past the scene, so just be advised about this problem. Santa Cruz, Bran Caforte at the Shady Brook Court, a tree down in the northbound lane there. Also want to talk a little bit about Carmel Valley at Berwick Drive. We have a two-vehicle crash reporting blocking lanes. CHP is en route to the scene there, so that one just being reported. And in Carmel Valley Road at, let's go to Live Oak, 17th Avenue at Soquel. We have a stalled Jeep that is blocking one of the lanes. This report brought to you by PG&E. The people of Pacific Gas and Electric are working hard to help manage your bills.
We continue now on the Peter B. Collins Show. Do you have 100% confidence in our voting and election processes?
Tuesday in November, took that stroll to cast my ballot at the local poll. Lines were long, but I didn't care. I had water, a hat, and my folding chair. Walked up to the booth, didn't say a word. Sure that my voice would be heard. Hit that button, my vote was sent. But now nobody knows exactly where it went. Fell off my boat, it isn't fair. I took a stand, doesn't anybody care? Then lost my boat, now do you know where did my ballot go?
Emily Buxtell from Florida there, which has been the scene of many electoral crimes in recent American history. And there's an effort to try to fix the problems, and unfortunately, it appears that it won't go far enough. We're talking about H.R. 811. That's called the Holt Bill, introduced and sponsored by Rush Holt, a Democrat from New Jersey, I believe. And Emily Levy is an activist from the Santa Cruz area who was in Washington lobbying on these issues last week. Emily, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And you were able to attend the hearings on Friday. I know that California's new Secretary of State, Deborah Bowen, was testifying, along with Charlie Crist, the Republican governor of Florida, and many others.
That's right. This was a hearing of the Elections Subcommittee of the House Administrative Committee.
Mm-hmm. And what was your sense of, the proceedings, and in particular, do they get it? It being the real risk to our election integrity from electronic voting machines.
No, they don't get it. Different ones of them get it to varying degrees, the folks on the committee. And, I'm glad you said what it is, because it's very complicated, and even people who have been working on this for a long time have pieces of it that they don't get or that we don't get. And so there really is still a lot of education to be done, and it's one of the things I learned both from being in the hearing and from speaking with congressional representatives and staff people while I was there, is how much education there really is still to be done.
Well, and fundamentally, a lot of these people believe that with a paper trail, these machines can be salvaged.
Yes, they do, and they're wrong,
mm-hmm.
to put it bluntly. What we're talking about, and I work with Brad, who's your guest every Friday, mm-hmm. and we're part of Velvet Revolution in coalition with Progressive Democrats of America, Voters Unite, Voter Action, Verified Voting of New York, and other folks working on trying to get an amendment that would actually ban electronic ballots. And one of the points that I was trying to get across when I was in D.C. last week was that we really can separate the voter's experience of voting from what happens to the vote after it's cast, and that if one wants to make the argument, which I'd also like to refute, that we need touch screens in order to provide accessibility for voters with disabilities and language minority voters. If we do need that technology, we can actually use the touch screens as what's called ballot marking devices, where
sure.
they're used to create a paper ballot, and then that paper ballot can be counted by more reliable methods.
Mm-hmm.
What we need not to have is for the ballot itself to be electronic.
Right.
And so in the lead-in to the commercial, you actually mentioned banning touchscreens, and I want to make that somewhat picky but also important point that there are actually some ways that touchscreen technology can be used that we find to be acceptable.
And I accept your correction.
So at the one of the people that spoke at the hearing last week was Noel Runyon, who's from my area. He lives in the San Jose area, and he is an accessible technology expert who just released a report recently called Improving Access to Voting Systems, which is available on the voteraction.org website.
Okay.
And he was called to testify about the problems with access of these DRE, direct record electronic voting machines, which are the ones with the electronic ballots, which he has found to be not so accessible, even though that's one of the main reasons we get told that we need to use them.
Right. They're using the disability community as kind of a wedge to prevent election integrity activists from moving forward with a total DRE ban.
That's absolutely true. And Noel and I have actually been working together to make sure that people know that there is more than one voice in the disability rights movement. And in fact, there's a statement that's being circulated with about 30 signatures on it, including a recent president of the American Council for the Blind and a number of other leaders more known and less known in the disability rights movement, saying just that it's really important that we have a system that is both accessible and secure, and that it's bogus to say that people with disabilities don't care if our votes get counted. We only care if we get to cast them.
Right. Just about 30 seconds remaining, Emily. Can the Holt bill be amended?
It can be, and we're trying to get it amended to ban DREs, direct record electronic machines, encourage people to contact their congresspeople about that. The bill is being marked up this week, and again, it's H.R. 811, the Holt bill. And for more information, you can go to voteraction.org, votersunite.org, and bradblog.com/Holt. Those are the three places I would encourage you.
Yeah. And if you haven't heard about it yet, please read Brad Friedman's comments at bradblog.com. He basically cut and pasted together a debate with Ralph Nies of People for the American Way about these issues, and it's very compelling. Emily, thanks for your work, and thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
We go into the free speech zone next. Call me toll-free, 888-5 Peter B.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Hello, I'm here to tell you about Central Avenue Bakery in beautiful Pacific Grove. Every day we feature the finest and freshest healthy whole grain foods with vegan and wheat-free options for those so inclined. We mill our own organic, fresh whole grain flour daily. Galina, our Russian pastry chef, turns those fresh whole grains into delicious masterpieces. Muffins, cakes, cookies, pies, banana chocolate bars, macaroons. She adds new items all the time. We also have a variety of whole grain breads, fresh homemade sandwiches, soups, and veggie entrees made with mostly organic ingredients. Our all-you-can-eat Sunday buffet with the top vegetarian entrees, soups, salads, and desserts is locally famous. We also welcome groups, parties, and catering orders. Stop in for a latte, snack, or full meal. You'll come back again and again. Come visit us at 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey in the old Granary building, just two blocks from the aquarium, or give us a call at 373-2000. That's 373-2000. Central Avenue Bakery, where healthy and delicious go hand in hand.
Doesn't it seem that the service is lacking at most service stations? Well, not at the Karma Shell at Rio Road and the Valero at Mid-Karma Valley Shopping Center. We take care of our customers. Karma Shell is happy to pump your gas and check under your hood at your request for no extra charge. At Mid-Karma Valley Valero, we offer expert car repair at reasonable rates with a fast turnaround. We do tune-ups, brakes, safety checks, and a 26-point inspection with an oil change. We specialize in Lexus and Toyota. Our mechanic is ASE certified. Call us at 624-0722. That's 624-0722. Carmel Shell at Rio Road and Mid-Carmel Valley Valero, putting the service back in service stations.
You got cooking? How's about cooking something up with me?
I'll tell you what I got cooking. Dinner's ready. I went to dinnersready.com, chose 8 gourmet dinners, made an appointment, and went to their storefront in the Country Club Gate Center in Pacific Grove and prepared the meals there myself. Now I'm cooking them in my own home.
What's that you say? Dinner's ready?
That's right. Dinner's ready. It's the newest concept in home cooking. They do all the shopping and chopping, and I get all the credit. If you're too busy to go in and make your dinners, they'll even do it for you. So sign up at dinnersready.com, stop by and see them in the Country Club Gate Center in Pacific Grove, or give them a call at 645-9100. That's 645-9100. Dinner's ready.
There's more than one side to every issue. Actually, there's usually more than two sides. It's important to get a different perspective on issues and current events, and that's what we'll provide you on Thursday nights at 10 on KRXA 540. Our show is called, appropriately enough, A Different Perspective. I'm Jack Quirk, and I'm your host. I have guests with a unique angle on current issues. I'm often joined by Phil Rapp and other guest co-hosts who bring their own expertise to our discussions. Join us each Thursday night at 10 for A Different Perspective here on KRXA 540.
Hi, this is Stephanie Miller. You know how much I love the Monterey Peninsula. You've got it all. Mountains, the sea, some of the best box wine I've ever had. You also have a great radio station, KRXA, your progressive prescription. So join me, voice guy extraordinaire Jim Ward, and producer Chris Lavoie as we take back America every weekday morning, 6 to 9 a.m., right here on AM 540.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Lines are open for you. It's the free speech zone here on the PBC show, and you can call and comment on any subject from any viewpoint from anywhere within the sound of my voice. The number, toll free, 888-5-PETER-B. Advice seriously, we're still rocking in the free world, and the First Amendment is still in full effect. So join us and let us know what's on your mind. We've talked a lot about very powerful issues today, about the case of David Hicks at Guantanamo Bay. He's the Australian who pled guilty yesterday to a single charge, hoping to find a way out of the darkness that we've created at Guantanamo and elsewhere in the world. We also talked with Perry Jeffries about the sorry case of Pat Tillman and how the Pentagon investigation really doesn't tell us more than we knew. And lots of other issues, too. So if there's something you want to comment on, I want to hear from you. Again, my number toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. And you can always drop me an email, peter@peterbcollins.com. Or if you think I'm a nut, try bigmouth at peterbcollins.com and see what happens. By the way, it was 20 minutes ago that I sent that test email to an account I just dreamed up for Karl Rove, and I sent it to turdblossom@gwb43.com. And still, at this moment, the mailer daemon has not responded that that is a bad email address. Now I'm regretting I sent it. I can figure there'll be... Oh, there's a knock on the door right now? Well, that was quick. Brian, see who's there and make sure they have a warrant, okay? Chris and Salinas, you're up first here in the Free Speech Zone. Welcome.
Hey, Peter, can I be part of your America?
You bet.
Unfortunately, today the county board of supervisors decided to let Claudio Valenzuela, the registrar of voters here, have his way and give him access to the money to buy those printers. I'm not sure exactly, you know, if he's what the details are, but they have given him permission to access the funds.
So this, to follow up for people who weren't listening last Friday, we discussed this with Dave and Larry. Chris and Larry, who have been attending these meetings and fighting for our interests regarding the voting machines. And the Monterey County Board of Supes is going to spend over $300,000 to buy printers
to attach to the voting machines to create the paper trail. And we were just talking with Emily Levy about this. That's not the same as a paper ballot. And unfortunately, we currently don't have rules, regulations, or practices that would require that the paper trail ever be counted. In some cases, it might be. In the case of a recount or some other effort like that, but there's no guarantee that it would even be properly audited. And so it's not a fix to the problem, and it appears that, sad to say, the Monterey County supervisors don't get that.
No, they, it's like Emily was saying, the ignorance, you know, to the issues is just, you know, I can't explain it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's disappointing. Now, at many county supervisors, they have to read an ordinance 1 week and then come back and pass it the next week. Is that the case with this, or did it pass?
Well, I wasn't there at the meeting. I just got a call from Larry.
Oh, okay.
And he said that they basically gave him authorization for the money.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So I think he has to access or apply for half of money, or they already have it. That I'm not sure. I'll call in Friday or let you know.
Okay.
Or right. Email you.
Great.
All right.
Well, thank you for the update, Chris. I appreciate right. it. Wish you had better news.
Yeah, take it easy.
All right. 888-5, Peter B., if you'd like to join us. Now, on a regular basis, there's a man named Mark Perkle in San Bruno, California, who sends me email copies of his letters to the editor. And I got a fresh one from Mark today. Here it is. The Bush administration and Attorney General Gonzalez don't want to testify to Congress under oath. Congress is ready to subpoena them to force them to testify. Bush threatens a constitutional showdown if they do. Can a compromise be reached? Is there a way that Gonzalez and Rove can be questioned in a way that the Bush administration would approve of? Bush and Gonzalez have vigorously defended the use of secret prisons in foreign countries as a way of getting to the truth. Both have stated to Congress that they're totally legal, that they are not torture, and they are effective. So maybe we should send Gonzalez and Rove to a secret foreign prison for questioning. How could they object to that? I bet the Democrats would go along with it. He signs it, "I'm Mark Perkle, and I approved this message." Joining us now is Stuart Ewan, who is the editor and publisher of what I think is a brand new website, which is called RejectedLettersToTheEditor.com. Stuart, welcome.
Great to be here, Peter.
Now, how was that sample email letter to the editor from Mark Perkle? Wasn't
I think Mark Perkle is the tip of the iceberg. There are a lot of people out there who know that the sort of major news media are avoiding, even on the letters to the editor page, inconvenient truths, visionary ways of seeing, and as a result, this kind of charade of public opinion that we see on the letters to the editor page cuts out people like Mark and people who are raising all kinds of serious questions and who may even offer serious alternatives. Rejected Letters to the Editor, which went online this weekend, and which is going to stay, it's being published every 2 weeks. We are not trying to keep up with the mind-numbing news cycle, which encourages nothing but amnesia. We're trying to kind of provide stuff that people can look at and chew over. Is a place which is really designed to publish knowledgeable, far-sighted letters as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. Now, Stuart, I'm going to channel Katie Couric here, who I believe was channeling Bill O'Reilly the other night on 60 Minutes. Some people say that you're only doing this because the New York Times won't publish your letters.
The New York Times does publish my letters.
Oh, good.
So, I had a letter in the book review while we were preparing this issue.
Okay. But I take it you've written some that didn't see the light of day or the...
I think a lot of people have written some that don't see the light of day. I mean, one of the things that's interesting, I got in touch when we were first preparing this periodical with the public editor of the New York Times, a guy named Byron Calame.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked him how many letters they publish each day and how many they receive each day. And after a back and forth, I got figures which indicated that the Times receives about 1,000 letters a day, and they publish somewhere between 12 and 16, which means that somewhere around 0.15% of the letters sent in see the light of day.
Yeah.
My hunch is that at least 0.15% of the letters that are sent in should see the light of the day, and I think that the issue is not simply one of space, but it's also one of editorial policy. I mean, if you go back to the early days of the war in Iraq, you will notice that the New York Times letters to the editor page was devoid of strong, sharp, to-the-point criticism of that war. And it was only when the Times sort of rearranged its editorial policy that the editorial letters to the editor page on the editorial page began to change. So I think the kind of underlying assumption of our publication is that letters to the editor pages, even though they represent a kind of silent attribution that the voice of the public should be heard, are, you know, highly edited, that there are gatekeepers involved, and rejected letters to the editor is really designed to bypass the gatekeepers and get ideas that are not currently part of the customary confines of the commercial news media out there.
Now, Stuart, you don't have the limitations of a print publication where there, you know, is only so much space and so much ink, but will you publish every letter submitted?
No, we're not publishing every letter submitted.
And what criteria will you use to reject letters rejected letters to the editor?
Actually, the criteria we're using is less about rejection than it is about acceptance. I mean, the feeling is that knowledgeable, far-sighted letters, which will add to public discussion, is what we're looking for. We also want to make it readable. We're not interested in becoming a dumping ground, which will only add to the kind of information overload that everybody complains about. So we're interested in really sort of selecting letters that sort of push the edges, and I would say push the society back in the direction of democracy, back in the direction of an idea that the editorial, that newspapers should be an extension of the vital public discussions that are going on, unfortunately now, primarily in living rooms.
Now, I just found the button here on your homepage about rejected by RLTE. And so you have a page here. It says, as we grow, we expect we'll receive letters that, while not selected, be included, that editors believe readers might like to have a look at. These may be humorous, preposterous, or of grammatical or rhetorical interest, or particularly odious in outlook and expression. So far, you don't have any of those, but you will have room for rejected letters to rejected letters to the editor.
That's right.
I think that's beautiful. Well, I want to thank you for a great idea, Stuart. I'm going to bookmark this, and I'll drop back every couple of weeks to see what's up there.
You might want to pass the URL on to your listeners as well.
Rejectedlettersto-theeditor.com.
Very good. Thanks a lot, Peter.
You bet. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for talking with us. And a guy I used to know was just a proliferate letters to the editor writer, and he used multiple names. And one of them was spelled phonetically, but if you read it out and sounded it out, the name that he would use was Victional Name, as in fictional name. I think name was spelled N-A-I-M or something like that. But he got published under that moniker on many occasions. It was just amazing. Dave and Eureka, you're next here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Peter, two thoughts, if I might. I'm one of the people that's been hanging out in our congressman's office to get him to support a tougher measure on this war.
And how's it going there?
Well, a few stayed overnight. One had to leave. The two, he got locked out, and the two got arrested. Some of them may be back today. I'm not sure that that's a good plan to do it that way. We've got to hit hard when we can. You had a guest earlier, and I wanted to share the thought, I guess I had before, that there's nothing about this administration that I can trust at all. I think if they said that George Washington could not tell a lie, nobody in this administration can tell the truth about anything. So I have to assume whatever account that they are giving us now of these 15 Marines and the, they're lying. I just assume that they're lying anymore. It's proven to be the case so often. But.
Well, it is it's confounding because you know we don't want to be moronic or you know simply reject everything that is reported to us. On the other hand, so many people have been duped either willfully or, you know, through lack of sufficient skepticism about things that are very cut and dried for us.
Well, when Condoleezza is speaking, we are being lied to. When Cheney is speaking, we are being lied to. And Bush and that whole damn team, it's frustrating. I mean, how would we ever get the truth? Now, they want to say, we don't want to go in and swear under oath and testify. Just trust us, you know? Imagine that.
Yeah, yeah, it is breathtaking, truly, Dave. Well, thanks for checking in today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Peter.
All right. Keep us posted on the events there at Mike Thompson's office in Eureka. We take a break and return. There's room for another call or two if you want to join us in the free speech zone. Lines open at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. It's the Peter B. Collins Show. KRXA 540. Progressive talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
Every Sunday morning at 10, check out Rock Roller Real Estate, America's favorite real estate show. Learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are. Rock Roller Real Estate, every Sunday morning at 10. To be a guest, call 408-892-3376. That's 408-892-3376. For more information, stop by our website at rockrollerrealestate.com. Rock Roller Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Hello, everybody. This is R.J. Moyet. Join me Sunday nights from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. for Sports Phone KRXA. Now all of us Monday morning quarterbacks can get together Sunday nights and talk about football, baseball, basketball, tennis, golf, hockey, softball, volleyball, kickball, bocce ball, bowling, rugby, lacrosse. Well, maybe we won't talk about rugby and lacrosse, but join me anyway for Sports Phone KRXA, Sunday nights from 6 p.m. until 7 p.m.
All right, Sports Phone. Let's talk a little bit what's happening on the traffic phone. And I can tell you that we do have a problem in Carmel. Carmel Valley Road at Berwick, still reportedly a two-vehicle crash there. And CHP is working that scene pretty diligently right now. Let's also take a look at a problem in Oromas, Anzar Road at Canyon. We have a parked camping trailer still partially blocking the roadway. It's been there since about almost 4 o'clock, so that one's still working for some reason. And then we want to take a look at yet another problem. Let's look at it. There it is. Santa Cruz. It's Brancaforte at Shady Brook. It's a tree down in the northbound lane. They are trying to get crews there to cut up that particular problem. And I can let you know this report is also brought to you by JCPenney. This Friday and Saturday, it's the one and only JCPenney Sweet Sale, brought to you by JCPenney.
And the Peter B. Collins Show rolls on.
Those who start wars never fight them. Those who fight wars, they never like them.
This just in the last hour, the Senate defeated an attempt to erase an American troop withdrawal date from an Iraq spending bill this afternoon. By a vote of 50 to 48, the Senate allowed a withdrawal date of March 31, 2008 to remain in the supplemental bill for funding the war in Iraq. The majority defeated an amendment offered by Senator Thad Cochran of Mississippi, the ranking Republican on the Appropriations Committee, that would have removed that date. Now, it's a non-binding measure, that part of it, so the spending bill coming out of the Senate is very different from the House bill, and both are expecting to be, both are expected to draw a veto promised by President Bush. And the margins are not sufficient to override a veto like that. Chuck Hagel of Nebraska, showing himself as a principled Republican, broke with his colleagues in endorsing a timetable and opposing the Cochran Amendment. Quote, "There will be no victory or defeat for the United States in Iraq," said Hagel. "There will not be a military solution to Iraq. Iraq belongs to the 25 million Iraqis who live there. It doesn't belong to the United States." Well, it's gratifying to see that this kind of debate is taking place in the Senate, but let me offer this comparison. Right now, we're hearing Republican talking points that the surge in Iraq is working, that there are fewer car bombings, fewer, execution-style killings in Baghdad reported over the last few weeks. But keep in mind that Muqtada al-Sadr has told his people to melt away, not to resist. And so this is a phony sense of progress on the part of the Bush administration and its so-called surge. And I would say that the House vote on Friday and the Senate vote today, unfortunately, kind of fall into the same category. They're going to be vetoed, and ultimately it will be a moment that Democrats can point to that perhaps may become the turning point regarding the war. But in and of itself, it's not that much progress. And ultimately, as I've been saying, I believe the Democrats will have to confront the ugly reality. If their only choice is to cut off funding for this misguided, illegal, immoral war, and that these kind of half measures, compromise measures, timelines, benchmarks, and all that stuff don't mean anything to a president like Bush. What he will respond to is if he doesn't have the money to pay for this war. And I know it's ugly, and I know that the fallout is going to be that Democrats don't support the troops and they want to cut and run and all that crap. But we've heard it before, and it's bogus, and we know it. Democrats must confront that. It won't be easy, and there are a lot of moving parts that are not moving in that direction. I understand that. But realistically, it's the only way out of this mess. Peter V. in Salinas today joins us. Hi, Peter.
Good afternoon, Mr. Peter B. Collins.
Yes, sir.
I wanted to report that when Xavier called in early today saying someone in the morning had said that Pat Tillman had notified the Rangers of who he was and et cetera, et cetera, that was me.
Mm-hmm.
And I got that from a San Jose Mercury News article dated March of 2006. This was the second in a series of three investigations that mm-hmm. I got that from.
Mm-hmm. I do recall reading that. I don't remember the part about the flare. I remember the line, I'm effing Pat Tillman,
yes.
Which was an effort to get them to stop shooting at him.
Well, it was part of a 2,100-page transcript of the descriptions. It's, I believe it might still be available on mercurynews.com. It was written by, I'm looking here, by one Scott Lindlaw and Martha Mendoza.
Okay.
Anyway, it's it's really hard to say what happened since included in that transcript were pages that were blacked out and provided to the family or removed entirely, mm-hmm. which, according to the Tillman family, they found, quote, wanting. And the latest quote from the family, of course, is shamefully unacceptable, and that's the latest report that was handed to the Tillman family. And, Peter, if I might wrap it up with my last quote from the Tillman family for the day, if you'll allow me that.
I will. Go ahead.
The deception surrounding this case was an insult to the family. But more importantly, its primary purpose was to deceive a whole nation. We say these things with disappointment and sadness for our country. For once again, we've been used as props in a Pentagon public relations exercise. And, Peter, the other quote is from General Guerin, who publicly apologized to the Tillman family and acknowledged that the Army's handling of the case had eroded its standings. Quote, we as an Army failed in our duty to the Tillman family, the duty we owe to all families of our fallen soldiers. Give them the truth, the best we know, as fast as we can.
Well, it is so sad to see this exploited, and the words of the Tillman family are very powerful, and I'm glad you brought them forward.
Peter, I'm glad to have this in a format to bring this up. I myself am sad by what can only be characterized as criminal negligence, professional misconduct, battlefield incompetence, concealment, and just blatant destruction of evidence, along with a deliberate deception.
Well,
as you said, Peter, these aren't missteps. And again, you keep pointing out nobody is really held to account. And that's truly the tragedy of this story.
Mistakes were made, but nobody made the mistakes. They just were made. Thank you, Peter.
Thanks, Peter.
I'd like to offer just a moment of silence in memory of Pat Tillman.
Happy trails to
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina, beat a path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. White House Press Secretary Tony Snow is sidelined indefinitely with a recurrence of cancer.
I'm Peter Mayer at the White House. Tony Snow knows all about cancer. He had surgery for colon cancer just over 2 years ago.
The biggest problem you have a lot of times with cancer is just flat-out fear.
Snow speaking last week as he announced plans for the surgery that uncovered the spread of the disease. But he went into the operation with a positive attitude.
Once you decide that you're going to embrace life, you become a much better patient.
Today, Snow told a colleague he's going to beat the disease. He's consulting with his doctors on chemotherapy options. Peter Mayer, CBS News, the White House.
Before the Senate voted today, White House spokeswoman Dana Perino issued a veto warning.
The administration strongly opposes the Senate bill. The legislation would substitute congressional mandates for the considered judgment of our military commanders. The bill assumes and forces the failure of the new strategy even before American commanders in the field are able to fully implement their plans.
Nevertheless, the Senate tacked a timetable for withdrawal onto the measure providing more funds for the war in Iraq. Majority Leader Harry Reid.
Well, we're very satisfied with the vote. The vote that's
not a vote for winners or losers. It's a vote for the American people. They won this.
The House took similar action last week. Money to carry on the war will be held up until this stalemate is resolved. What had been a big victory for the government suddenly evaporated in court today when the man who committed the biggest tax fraud in U.S. history was spared having to pay a huge penalty. CBS News reporter Stephanie Lambidakis has the story.
Prosecutors considered Walter Anderson one of their most elusive targets, a master of disguise who hid vast sums from the IRS. Now Anderson has eluded paying more than $100 million in restitution as part of his plea deal. It wasn't anything he did. It was prosecutors who put the wrong statute on the plea agreement. An embarrassed U.S. Attorney's Office in Washington says it will file civil charges to try to get the money.
In the meantime, Anderson, who made his fortune in telecommunications, is sentenced to 9 years in prison. Apparently, the tainted pet food recall 10 days ago has affected hundreds of animals. CBS News correspondent Barry Bagnato has the latest.
Surveys are now going out to some 18,000 vets linked to the Veterinarians Information Network, an online data exchange. Co-founder Dr. Paul Pion says vets already have posted